Let's go.
What's up, party people? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Kathleen here with B-Toms and producer Dave. Today, we are super freaking hyped to discuss the last two episodes of the new Netflix series, Cursed. And boy, do we have things to say.
Super hyped. Super hyped. We haven't even had a chance to discuss ourselves. So this is literally just us about to just break everything down. Like, this might be a long one,
guys.
And
if you've been following us for, like, up until now, this is the best part of the freaking season. I love it. These two episodes were very, 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 very good.
I totally agree. Just the hits just keep on coming. It was good TV.
This season has just been one giant crescendo. Like, I think we're going to be able to hear it when we listen back to these episodes, how much more excited we are
exactly.
in them.
And the first one was just like, meh. Like, I'm not even ready to get into this.
Right.
But like now, 100%. Season 2, when you coming out?
Yeah, they really build it up. In the beginning, it was slow. But by now, I'm ready for season 2. So I don't usually go after shows where I'm like, by the end, it was worth it. Like, I don't love saying that about a show. Like, yeah, it's worth it in the end. I think season 2 is just going to be like hit after hit.
Yeah.
As long as we get one.
Let's just do this.
Yeah, let's just do this. Okay, so episode 9, entitled Poisons. We start off with Merlin is riding on a horse kind of just through this field or whatever, and he just gets shot by an arrow out of nowhere. It's the fisherman.
We
like the fisherman.
We do.
Great character.
We like the mongers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he is singing the song Bring Us In Good Nail. Oh my gosh, Bring Us In Good Ale, I'm too excited, which is the name of the previous episode or two episodes ago. But yes, the fisherman, as we know, is sent by Rugen, the leper king. He says, essentially, he tells Merlin, I'll take the leper king's gold, but this was personal. Like, this is for dad.
Yeah, like, I would have done this for free, but like,
love
the gold
that.
Is just like a little sprinkle on top. Like, I would have murdered you just because.
So we got a little bit of fisherman backstory, but it don't matter. This is our boy Merlin we're talking about. But anyway, he says, like, I poisoned this arrow, it's gonna squeeze your airways. So like, Merlin's in trouble here.
He basically uses the arrow, like, he takes it out of his chest and then just stabs the fisherman with his own arrow, which
I look here. Yeah,
so I do have some quarrels with this scene. My one issue is that I wanted the fisherman to be like a larger character. Like, he was introduced very cool. Like, he had a very good build up, and then it just felt like, what was it? Maybe like he was in it for two episodes, I think.
Exactly.
And then he just died. So it was like a huge build up for nothing, really. And the fact that Merlin takes an arrow that is dipped in poison and kills the fisherman with that same arrow, even though
he ate the coal.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
well,
I guess. But
on.
Like, the fisherman literally takes one stab to the neck, where Merlin's literally just like writhing in pain, and then
Merlin's like magic too.
Yeah.
I feel like
we see him later.
Later.
Like, yeah, okay.
You can
more
than your average.
But like,
human.
At the time, I was like, this is just fucking ridiculous. But it was a good fight overall, though.
My sticking point is that I wanted to see more of the fisherman.
Yeah, I agree.
That's why I was so upset, because one of my highlights of the season was when he's introduced and he's like putting the dirt on that bandit. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Buried someone alive. I just think he's an awesome character.
It would have been nice to see the reason like why he hated Merlin so much. Yeah. Like, maybe there will be some go backs to that, but as of right now, we don't know anything.
Everyone hates Merlin.
Yeah,
except for us who love.
We love Merlin.
So Merlin kills the fisherman. R.I.P. We liked him. And then he just kind of rides into this camp and starts just wolfing down ashes and coal from like a burnt out fire.
So weird.
We thought that was for the poison, right? Like a little Merlin magic
it
trick.
It had to be for the poison. Mm-hmm. Otherwise,
just sucking it up or something.
I thought that was kind of cool.
I
like that. I just
I love any kind of like old timey ailments,
herbal remedy.
Exactly.
I liked when they were like back at the Abbey when they were using the like the Fey remedies on the Red Paladin that they had to keep alive.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really cool. But the next scene we get is Nimue really quick in Grimaire.
Just really quick, I just want to say we have done past episodes character by character. But I think at this point in time, just because like everything is literally actually happening at once, like we just have to do it scene by scene at this point in time.
Yeah, we realized the last podcast episode that we did, there was a lot of skipping around. We think it's just easier to go from point A to point B.
And
this
is how it's the finale episode. So
early on it was really doable because everyone was like had not ever met up. Like, they were just all doing their own thing. So it was a lot easier. But now it's like, okay, scene by scene, because everything means something the next scene.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts.
So go back. Yeah.
So yes. Okay. Merlin is eating the coals, and then we go to Nimue and Grimaire. Quick scene. All I got from it is they're telling her, "Hey, the Fae are gonna starve in a week. Like, this siege is really cutting into us. We gotta figure something out here." So the next scene we get here is with Uther and the Queen Regent. And essentially, the Queen Regent is telling Uther, informing him that Nimue and the Fae have taken back the city of Grimaire from the Red Paladins. But a little bit of strife between Uther and the Queen Regent. Uther says he wants to lead this siege of Grimaire to take it back, but the Queen Regent has pretty much already sorted it out so that the Red Paladins, i.e. Father Cardin, are going to lead this siege of Grimaire.
Right.
And that's more or less all we get there, but the Red Paladins are hanging around with Uther's forces, so in the same camp, we get a scene with Father Cardin, and a new character is arriving in Abbot Wicklow.
This was really cool. I like this scene a lot. Should I break it down? Yeah. All right, so we get introduced, so it's Father Cardin, like we said, it's just they're at the camp, and we get introduced to Abbot Wicklow, and Abbot, like, immediately Father Cardin, like, bows to Abbot Wicklow. Like, so this means that, like, he has, like, I guess some, like, higher, there's a hierarchy and he's up there.
And he's up there, yeah, exactly.
But they're going back and forth. They're like, "What brings you out here?" And he's just like, "Oh, you know, like, Father Cardin, or His Holiness is just, you know,
sent me out here to get experience in the field, but he says my interests tend towards strategy."
Correct, yeah. And he does refer to him as His Holiness, so we know that His Holiness is, like, the tier one. He's, like, the one above everybody else.
He's a little wimp, doesn't drink.
Yeah,
doesn't
drink. He's wimpy looking.
Just water for me.
They have a good back and forth there, yeah. Like, that just, like, shows, like, that was interesting, too, that comment, because I guess it shows the dedication between the hierarchy. Like, I'm sure His Holiness wouldn't have taken a glass of wine either. He probably would have had only water. Like,
yeah, probably. Just highlights his discipline and commitment to the faith, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
God, ew.
Yeah,
just
right.
Just like truly ew. Why would you ever want to be?
Yeah, we're just sipping down whiskey at the moment.
Last week when we were like, where would you want to be? Like, which faction, quote unquote, would you be in? And we were all just like, we're not sure, but definitely not the fucking Red Paladins.
Oh,
like,
no.
If anyone who ever showed, that's why Iris is like the worst.
Well, anyway. Depends on who you ask. Yeah, but true. We'll talk about Iris later.
Anyway, sorry, I just sidetracked.
So Wicklow is essentially here. They end their conversation. Wicklow is showing interest in seeing the Weeping Monk. Yeah. And he kind of has a backhanded comment. He says, I want to see this notorious Weeping Monk who let the Fae slip through his fingers at what was the name of their camp? Nemos. And he's although like, he does say, like, albeit he did find their camp.
But he's like using terms like he's like, he did track them with like uncanny skill. Like like he has these suspicions. He knows that the Weeping Monk is not what he appears to be. He's definitely not. I mean, we know this already. He's not human. You know, he's not a man blood.
I didn't like Wicklow. Wicklow, thumbs down, bad guy.
Good actor though. Yeah, good actor. Whenever we say like, that, like thumbs down, bad guy. You know, like shit, fuck that guy. Like that usually means that the actor is really
good. They're just good bad guys. You know.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And they have a. I just love their back and forth, man. It's just like talking about, you know. Stupid, like they're trading like witty remarks basically, and you know, I don't remember any off the top of my head, but
as much as I hate the Red Paladins, Father Cardin is great. He is.
Oh, you're hopping on the train.
I've always been on the train. I just feel like I haven't vocally said he's so, and we'll get to it. There's a scene in 10 where I was like, fuck, he's good.
Yeah,
like damn.
I think I know the scene you're talking about.
Oh, it's good.
Anything else to say about this scene?
Last thing is that Wicklow, like. Towards the end, they're talking about like your campaign is like not mine, or like both of our campaigns are the same. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it was really weird because they made it seem like they were almost not, they didn't have the same goals. Like, it was really weird.
I do not specifically remember that, but the whole vibe between them leads me to believe that like Father Cardin isn't entirely.
Wicklow was saying like, you're don't worry, like, because Father Cardin was like being suspicious of like the reasons why he was there and all this stuff, and like Father Cardin's like sipping his wine, he's just like, I don't know what you guys are up to, and Abbot Wicklow basically is like, I assure you, our campaign is your campaign. Like, we support you. We're going to give you all of our support. But it sounded like
it
two
almost
different
seems
groups.
Like the Red Paladins might be like a separate militarized faction within the church.
Yeah, with that's a good way.
I actually don't remember that exchange specifically, but it seems like that could be the dynamic there.
Oh, and then the whole setbacks thing is like funny. It was like, remember he was like Father Card or His Holiness is saying that there were setbacks, and Father Card's like, you call them setbacks. I just think them as a, like this just happened, you know, we're going to move on from this. And then Abbott looks like, sure, whatever. And then they're talking back and forth, and, you know, Cardin says something like sly to him. And then he's just like, well, don't forget your setbacks.
Yeah, setbacks again.
Yeah. That was a good one. But yeah, I think that's pretty much good for that scene, right?
Yeah, I agree. So moving on, we get Morgana and Nimue. They're just kind of talking about the current state of the phase. Morgana agrees that you were right to take Grimaire, and we're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, she was awesome. And then she says, Hawksbridge should be next. We should take everything between here and there, burn all the cities in between of anybody who opposes us. Yeah. I don't know if she goes that hard, but she gets aggro so quickly. And Nimue is trying to, you know, counsel reservation for herself. And Nimue is all sorted out in her mind. So she's counseling reason to Morgana. It's just showing that the Kaliak has her teeth in Morgana.
And Morgana's just like, look, just let the sword, you know, guide you. Mm. You know, stop running.
You know, I like a character where they are taken over by something maybe evil or demonic, but they're still themselves, where it's not, it's like, it is not, I don't want to believe she's not herself. Exactly, but she's still a little bit herself. Like, it's not like she's fully a demon.
Well, yeah, she's still on.
And I like that.
She's still Team
I just
Nimue.
Like what that when there's such a gray area where, like, I don't know. I mean, you don't know who's
scheming,
talking.
Yeah.
Or if Nimue's me or
that's
not Nimue.
That's a good way to put it. I think that's a good way to put it. It's like, who's talking? Like, right now, like in this scene, it's definitely Morgana talking. But when we saw Nimue become the Fae Queen, and she was just like Fae Queen, like she was chanting it, but she wasn't, there was no enthusiasm. That
and
was a Kalia.
I like to think that Morgana maybe is like trying to fight it internally. Like, I just make this shit up in my head where I'm like, I'm hoping that they're having some sort of internal battle where she's like, Morgana's trying
to
fight through, but the Kaliak is just taking over.
Yeah, right now, I think she's just trying to understand what's going on with her.
She
ate a
really
spider, now stuff's starting to happen. She's like, maybe I shouldn't have taken that spider, but it's too late now. Yeah,
when
she's all
spider
zonked
hits.
Out. Yeah. So, okay, next scene we get real quick with Dave's girl, Iris. She's, like, burning herself over a candle.
Being psycho.
She's,
just
like, talking
psycho.
To herself, chanting.
No, so let me be clear. I think actress for Iris is very attractive. Iris herself is a conniving little bitch, and I fucking hate her.
Okay.
Yeah, but she sucks.
I mean, this scene's crazy. Bloody crosses on the wall. Like, I mean...
This is
crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, she's like, why is she so upset? Because she didn't kill Nimue when she was in Grimaire?
She's shit talking herself psycho does.
But she's like chanting, like, kill her, I will.
Two sides.
Nimue.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can't get a read on her. She's a really interesting character to follow, actually, so far, because she just has. She's
I would
doing
like
her
to get a
thing.
Background story of Iris, like why she's like this.
Oh, I would definitely love that. And I think we will get that because Iris is going to be like a main villain.
I mean,
even at this point
on.
In time, yes, I see where you're coming from. But even at this point in time, we know Iris is like, she gets her own story. Like, she is going to be a main villain.
I was shook when they gave her own story. Like, where it evolves by the end of 10, I'm like, you're kidding.
Yeah, 10,
you better
can't
stop.
Wait to get there, but we gotta just do this.
I know,
we gotta
right,
do
right,
this.
Okay. She oh man,
10 is great.
All right, so that's all for Iris right now. We move on to Merlin arriving in Grimaire to see Nimue on the throne. Nimue breaks the news, I'd like you to meet Merlin the magician, aka my father.
Everyone's like, skirt!
Pim's like, what?
This is your father?
Pim said something really funny. I don't remember what it was, but she's like, you're joking or something.
Yeah. Just adding like brownie points for Pim. Definitely.
Yeah, they sprinkle them on there. So Merlin wants Nimue to come with him to see Cumber. so that they can give him the sword in exchange for his help protecting the Fae. We've talked about this before. Everyone is telling Nimue to use the sword as bargaining chip to cozy up with one of the many kings that are trying to claim the throne, give them the sword of power in exchange for protection of the Fae. Mm-hmm. Merlin is simply saying, go with Cumber. He's got an army of Vikings. He's crazy. Like, give him the sword.
And of course, Nimue doesn't trust him. I mean, well, last we saw him.
And she had to be a prisoner, right? In the dungeons.
Yeah. She would, yeah.
Like you can live, but you'll be in the dungeons.
Yeah, for the rest of all eternity.
It's not that long. It's
fine. Not that long. No. Yeah, just wait it out.
But I just want to say, I just found it. It's Pim chokes on an almond. It literally says, she goes, I just choked on an almond, and then like looks at him and is like, oh gods, are you serious?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Which is so funny. Pim is so good.
Next we get Arthur.
Wait, I do want to say, I like this line from Merlin to Nimue. I'm not sure if it's in this specific scene, but he says, any fool can die, living takes imagination. Yeah. I love that line.
And what's interesting that like Nimue offers Merlin as a guest to like, because she was treating him at the beginning like with hostility, but like at the end of the day, it's your father. Like, I'm not going to go with you, but you can stay the night as a guest.
Yeah.
There's tension, but it's not like, you know, there's total bad blood between the two.
It's your dad.
Yeah, exactly. Merlin, exactly.
The magician.
Trying to give him a second chance almost, you know, like the shit that she saw was hundreds of years ago. Mm. Fucking A. So. Yeah.
Well, I just like the bond between, he keeps saying, it's my kin, you're my kin. And I like the idea of, even though they've never met and there's probably all this lore around Merlin, she's like you said, Dave, that's my dad. And there's a bond. There's something, familial bonds are not something to fuck with. I mean, immediately. Exactly. And Merlin doesn't have anybody, really. So I said this last episode, Merlin being her dad made this series for me. I was like, there it is.
Yeah. Huge. Yeah, that's the plot twist we need. Yes. And that's where we get all this, you know?
All of this. Yeah. It's so good. Okay, cool.
So we can go into the next scene, which is
Arthur and Morgana.
Which I just want to say, Luke, I'm upset that he's not on this podcast, because in earlier podcasts, he had stated that he hated the fact that Arthur and Morgana never talked. Like, they always just kind of avoid each other. They don't really ever have these one-on-one conversations. And now we finally get why.
My God, Morgana acts like he walked in on her watching porn or something.
Yeah.
She is like, wait, no, what didn't you, what were you, how long were you standing there?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and like the reason, and so we finally get the reason why there's this tension. So Morgana basically admits, she's like, you going to your uncle really was not a good idea in my mind. He's the one who basically sold me to the Abbey, I think, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then we get Arthur's side of it. He says he's been in like
this
debts.
Was a very good scene. Arthur did good a acting. Very great job.
Arthur
like,
grew on
here,
me a lot in the last like three episodes as a character. I'm so
cry.
Excited.
Very vulnerable.
He's literally 12 years old. Like, what the fuck do you want me to do about this? And it was emotional. He's crying the whole time.
And he essentially said he just wanted to participate in the tourney for like one chance to like do something with his life, for honor, for like greatness.
And with honor comes then the money, which he can then he's just like, I want to
do
this.
He was just saying like, I've never had that shot, and I've, you know, been in debt since I was 12, you know. I just wanted to go for it. And if, you know, begging to my uncle for this chance is how I got to do it, that's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah. And then I guess something starts happening to Morgana. I think it's like some reaction with the Kaliak or something like starts to happen. And Arthur's just like, yo, you good? What's going on?
She's hiding a dead dog, right?
Yeah, that's right here. As he leaves, Morgana just whips out this dead dog. Like,
what was the dog?
Did I miss something?
Did I miss that too?
I have no idea. So
did we
like,
all blink at the same time and miss what the dog?
Or maybe it's just
comes important again.
Maybe
so.
It's just showing you that the Kaliak is just taking over. It has a bloodlust.
Yeah,
you know?
Normal Morgana wouldn't have a dead dog.
Yeah, exactly.
The dead dog is not a main character. So we'll just leave it at that.
He doesn't have
forward.
An IMDb credit at
all.
Yeah,
no. Maybe he should though. We're talking about it. Yeah, we're really talking about him. Rip to the dog. So the next scene we get is in the Red Paladin camp again, and it is the Weeping Monk bringing the Green Knight Gawain to Father Cardin.
Mm-hmm. Loved this exchange, because Gawain's just defeated. He's staring down the Weeping Monk, and then he looks at Father Cardin and is like, I know everything. Father Karn's asking him, what do you know about like the Sword of Power? Where's Nimue? Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I'll spill the details, but it won't be the details you're looking for.
Yeah.
Fucking great scene.
It was perfect because like they're having this conversation that like some of these fae scum can pass for humans, and like Gawain is just like looking like the condescending Wonka at the weeping monk, like, oh boy, we got a fae right in his midst.
Yeah.
Well, he's like, why? In a later scene, he's like, why didn't you say anything?
It's
Gawain's a respectable dude.
Yeah. Gawain is a respectable dude. We like Gawain.
Rip to Gawain.
Yeah.
Do we like Gawain? I like Gawain.
Paul does not. Paul is not a Gawain guy. He just, I guess in the first introduction we get of him, basically Gawain comes off as standoffish.
He was pretty
saying he hated the line saying something about that's my Nimue.
Yeah, but we all liked when him and Arthur came together.
It's an older brother relationship. Like, exactly. That's the thing. Like, that's what we decided at that when they had that handshake. It was just,
honestly,
could just see he was an older brother.
Anyone who likes Nimue is cool with me.
Yeah.
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 Boys definitely. Of my boys are my boys.
Oh, yeah.
Nimue is a, I think she's a good MC. Maybe not the best, but she's a good MC. Like,
she has
a lot.
Gotten so, I mean, they wrote her character kind of, I hate to say it, but I think it was kind of wishy-washy in the beginning. It's like, which way did you want to go? And there's really not enough time for her to be like, oh, she came into herself. I don't really know that it played that way in my brain. But God, she was good by the end. She killed. I mean, Catherine Langford was great the whole time. I truly think it was the script in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
I agree. The script was pretty bad. The CGI also wasn't doing it for you either.
Right. And but man, incredible by these ends. She has some good ass scenes in these last two episodes.
I want to see.
She's a badass in some scenes. I still think when they're taking Grimair and like she just like trots out on that one white steed and it's just like, come on, come take me on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's a badass. I like the character a lot.
But Kathleen, here we are at the scene that you love so much with Uther and his mama. I don't know if you want to lead us in.
Okay.
I can lead us in, or you can get the reaction.
So I don't have any of the details because I watched last week. I forget. But how dope. Like, you got mommy issues? Just kill her.
So, Uther essentially tells his mom, oh, we dealt with the Red Paladin so that I can lead the Siege of Grimair. I'll get the sword, but, you know, in exchange, I told the Red Paladins that they could get, you know, wind up with a bunch of the occupied territories,
and
they're also going to get the witch, Nimue.
As he's telling her this is, you know, pouring a nice glass of wine, you know, maybe in celebration of what he had just accomplished, you know, he's making
a
deal. Have a sip, mother.
Yeah, have a sip of wine. And, like, kind of through his monologue, like, breaking down what the terms of the agreement are, she starts coughing, says, oh, it's nothing.
Hacks up a gross loogie.
Like, she start, Uther poisoned his mom, and it's awesome.
The acting here is great. He's just looking at her.
Uther was always a great character, I think.
He's just a wuss, but
he's
now
a
he's
wuss.
Coming
Other
into
than
his
the
own.
Fact that he's a wuss, like, I just think that all of his issues,
I would
like,
so disagree. He was not always a good character. He, like, only
him.
Just started growing on.
I liked him. He was always interesting. I think whenever he came on screen, his scenes just drew me in.
It's interesting because he was the one king that wasn't confident. He's going off
he
of what
was
his mother
thrown into this situation and had no control over any of this,
in
and
a world,
Merlin was to blame
in
for.
A world of Game of Thrones where everyone is entitled and thinks that they have a claim to the throne and they're confident and they're ready to just fuck everything up, there's Uther who's just like,
he's always trying to think
like be the Tommen to Cersei, you know
what
I mean, like just
exactly.
a puppet head, but now he's realizing that's what it is, looking around and being like, no, I
but
want to
he
be
was
the man.
Always,
I want to be the
like,
king
he was always logical. Like, he always meant well for his people. That's why I liked him. Even in the scene with Merlin, when he's just shitting on Merlin, I love that scene, too. But this was another great Uther scene.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I was watching this, like,
he's sitting there. He's just, you killed my fucking mother. Like, I know who you are. People told me these things, and you killed my fucking mom.
He has two one-liners. He says, like, no surprise, you gave birth to a stillborn.
Yes.
And then, like, with her dying breath, he says, I am now and forever your son. And he, like, smiles this twisted smirk.
Remind me of the Joker.
I was like,
the Joker.
Oh, my gosh. Uther, clap.
So
clap.
Mic
I love
drop.
That scene.
I think the way they killed her is drinking the spiced wine, too. Like, I think that's exactly.
It was the way she killed.
Yeah, the Sylvia. The
pet, his mom.
Yeah. You know, and there's something about, like, finding out, sure, he's a king, but he lived this life with this mother, quote unquote, who was cold and distant. And even though he was a king, you look back and you say, I could have had a mom who fucking loved me.
Right.
And yeah. I didn't have to be a king.
I didn't have to do
it. Yeah, exactly.
He is stressed to the max.
Exactly.
Right now. He's like, I didn't have to go through any of this.
Being a king is a fucking burden most of the time, but you're born into it. You're the heir apparent, yeah. whatever it is. But if you didn't have to be that, I don't think anyone would ever really choose it. You know? It's good stuff.
It would be fun to be king. I don't know. Maybe some of us would choose it. Who knows?
Yeah.
Good on Uther killing his mom.
We are very good on Uther
killing his mom. Yeah, RIP. The show takes another life in the Queen Regent. Mm-hmm. So the next scene we get is Uther sent a messenger to Grimair to tell Nimue the terms for her surrender. Essentially says, you will evacuate within 24 hours and surrender yourself peacefully. You can live in dungeons if you give Uther the sword. And that's the deal. That's what he says. We're going to roll up on you, kill all the Fae, or you can surrender yourself, give me the sword peacefully, and, you know,
and then he's just
get your guys out of here.
He doesn't say they're going to kill the Fae. He's like, they can return to their homes. And she's like, they have no homes. What are you right. fucking talking about? Like, yeah. I need an exact plan of what's going to happen to the Fae. Otherwise, right. I'm not doing anything. But so she comes up with this idea. She says, Uther can guarantee safety for the Fae. I will give you the sword. And, you know, the guy, I'm pretty sure Morgana's so mad right now. The guy has a smile. And he's like, let me tell this to the king, but he's probably going to say yes to this.
Yeah, he just wants the... Uther doesn't care about the Fae. He cares about the sword and Nimue mm-hmm. As a bargaining chip. So, yeah, he's probably going to take this deal, we think.
Yeah, definitely.
I have a quick question for you guys.
Yeah.
And you might know this. This might be really dumb. What year would you say this is taking place in?
Ooh.
Oh, my God. I can't even begin to put a number
yeah,
on
that. Yeah, I don't know. Like,
I was just trying to think of it.
BC? No, definitely not BC.
Like,
but maybe BC?
Let's take the magic out of it. Maybe it's like super Renaissance-y. Pull it up.
There's, if we're going to make this guess, I'm going to
1500s.
No way. I would say like 400 AD.
Okay. Google search says no. 5th and late 5th and early 6th centuries. It's like the tale of King Arthur.
Okay, what did I so literally seven. Just say?
Four, so 500 to 600.
500 to 600.
I was close. So yeah, this is 400. Okay. This could be 400.
This
right
is
now.
Also a unique spin.
I really overshot.
I'm a beast. I just yeah. knew that.
Not BC, though.
It wasn't BC. It could have been, but I said, no, I specifically said 400 AD is okay. the year that I
would so like to like think BC and AD is non-existent in this realm because no one's saying Jesus Christ or anything.
Well, actually, hold up. This is funny because in the Abbot Wicklow scene, Father Cardin says, this is the real crusade, not the one going on in Jerusalem.
Yeah, yes, yes,
so
yes.
That is,
I totally forgot about that.
The Red Paladins could be a militarized force specific to annihilating the Fae.
Correct.
God, I wish
and
magic.
They're the church, so like, you were right.
Wicklow,
you were right.
Who
it's
wears,
the church.
The people that wear like the black.
His holiness is literally
just like the church.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
So let's go with that. That sounds good.
I think we're good.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I think we're good on this scene, though. Like, that was basically it.
That was a perfect segue to bring that up. I forgot to bring up that quote. But yes, I think the actual stuff is an actual thing.
That's what I'm here for as well.
I've been thinking about it for a long time, but it just never spoke those words out loud. So I'm glad we talked about it.
Okay, so we go there. We get a really quick scene with a Fae guy talking to a human man in the streets of Grimair, and he just beats the shit out of this
guy. Well, the
guy
has a fucking cross on his door. You're going to get your fucking ass kicked. Mm-hmm. So he gets jumped.
It's highlighting there is now strife between the humans and
that's
the Fae
main reason, yeah.
occupants of Grimair. Tensions are rising. Okay, so moving on, and maybe one of you guys can make better sense of this than me, but it's the introduction. It's the first we see of, well, the second we see of Gawain, but he's in Brother Salt's kitchen.
Oh my gosh.
I don't remember anything specific of the exchange other than that Brother Salt's like a crazy dude. I guess he's like the Red Paladin's resident torturer.
The blind guy?
Yeah, the blind guy.
This is the first time we see Brother Salt, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved the character design. Just the sewn eyes. It was so gross to look at.
He's like, I'm going to rip your eyeballs out. And he's like, too late.
So Brother Salt's crazy.
Yeah, and I like that.
Gawain is in his chair.
It's a good torture scene, yeah.
Next scene we get back to Nimue in the throne room, and she is passing judgment on the Fae who
jumped
beat up
the
man human
blood.
Man.
Yeah.
And this was actually a really
this is
cool
a crazy scene.
Scene. Yeah, this
I
is one of those scenes where
scene.
Nimue, you know, is the sword is definitely getting to Nimue. She makes one of those brash, like, leader decisions and cuts this dude's hands off in one fail swoop.
Unbelievable.
She just, like, put out your hands. Like, they're coming off. And boy, do they. She says, hang them from the gates. Like, and she just walks out of there fuming.
This
she just flipped the switch.
Definitely, yeah. So non-rel paladins, this is, like, the lowest Nimue has hit. Like, she is literally harming her own kind right now. Like, that's
gotta be a leader though, and she is
gotta make a statement
not...
but is that the statement to make? Like, at the time I was like, this was not
a
good idea.
I think she had to make a statement because she is one against the humans coming after the Fae, but she would be a hypocrite if she didn't penalize the Fae going after humans.
I don't think if she has this, I don't think if she's ever come in contact with the sword, like if she is just the Fae queen just like as is, like she does not cut that guy's hands off. Like,
bro,
I think the sword
she, bro,
is literally making her do that.
If she never came in contact with the sword, she never would have become the Fae Queen.
That's
but let's
true.
Just say, hypothetically, if she was. Like, I think Nimue is that kind of caring person where she's seen her people struggle and be abused. There was no way she would do that
yeah,
to another.
Yeah, there wasn't much hesitation
dude,
here
I think
either.
It had to have been the sword. Just her showing no it. Mercy. Just cut. But it was a great scene. Definitely.
Yeah, because normally you would see the hesitation and being like, someone advising her to say
yeah.
you gotta make an example out of this yeah. person, but you're right, there wasn't really that. She's like, all right, let's do it.
The sword was her advisor.
Yeah,
but yeah, so the sword is just still whispering in her ear. I love that scene. Mm-hmm. Nimue's a badass. We get more of Gawain in Brother Salt's kitchen next. Brother Salt walks out to get some soup, right? He's like,
yeah.
some soup, then we ride again.
Yeah.
And then who strolls in but the weeping monk. And Gawain and the Weeping Monk just kind of clear the air and they get it out in the open. Gawain's just like, hey, you're Ashfolk, aren't you? Which is one of the Fae villages.
He knows. He's just like, yeah. you're literally destroying your own people. You could become this our greatest weapon if you just realize that Father Carden is literally manipulating you, you know?
Yeah.
You have all this potential. I've seen you fight. You kicked my ass.
Weeping Monk is asking, like, why didn't you turn me in? And Gawain is saying, we're still brothers, man. You're still, you know, blood of my blood.
Yeah, all Fae are Fae brothers, even the lost ones. Like,
yeah.
that's
your
loyalty, baby.
Your people need you. Tell them what you are.
Woo!
Unbelievable.
Own it.
Yeah.
Own it.
Own it. And so the Weeping Monk definitely is.
What he said is, because the Weeping Monk is just trying to justify, he says, this is where I belong now, more like reassuring himself than anything because he knows Gawain's making a lot of sense. And Gawain says, dude, if you think you belong here, then tell them what you are and see how you get treated. Because
yeah,
you
love
do
that.
Not
love
belong
that
here, buddy.
Yep.
And the Weeping Monk, you can tell this is resonating with him. He's having
he walks out and he's just like
conflict.
Questioning everything. Uh-huh. Like, you could see the intensity in his face, just like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, honestly. Who am I fighting for now?
We good here?
Yeah. A brief scene.
Oh, he says, you don't even know the difference between kindness and hate.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
You don't. You don't. Because you've been literally brainwashed. You've literally been brainwashed. You don't.
Stockholm Syndrome. He'll know.
He doesn't know. But good here.
So next we get Merlin just kind of hanging out observing his wound when Nimue walks in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did she ask? Like, what does she ask? She's like, is this what it feels like?
Yeah, they're okay. This is their first chance to like really talk one-on-one, and she kind of starts to open up because she's not in front of her council anymore.
She literally just cut the hands off of a Fae,
yeah.
and now she's like questioning her decision. She comes in, and she's like, so it was the sword. It had to have been the sword that made her do that.
You hit it right on the head. She said, is this what it felt like? And he's like, yep.
Yeah,
this is
exciting.
What it is.
You literally saw what
it
felt like.
Yeah.
You saw me and peak me, so... But she doesn't want to give up the sword. That means just, you know,
yeah.
that is their main defense, basically, at this point. Her and the sword are the main defense.
And Merlin is just once again trying to, now that she's, like, not sitting on the throne, she's not, like, Fae Queen Nimue. She's just Nimue. He says, he says something cool, like, the age of men is upon us. Like, the Fae people went from the rivers to the forests to the caves, and they've adapted all over the place, which I thought was cool, because that probably lends credence to the fact why they're all, like, kind of like snake people or
tree people. Yeah, right. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They had to, as the world of men, like, populated, they were pushed back into the forests and stuff.
Right.
And actually, this is where we get the quote, any fool can die, living takes imagination. Mm-hmm. And he says, ... Please reconsider Umber's offer.
Yeah.
He's saying, this is a very fatherly,
this
like,
is literally
vulnerable,
like,
Merlin saying, I don't want you to die, Nimue. Yeah. Like, just be smart about this. I've advised kings for hundreds of years. Like, I know how you can live. This is the way to do it.
Yep.
It's really interesting that Nimue, I mean, this is every tale of a queen or a king where they're ready to die for their people. And Nimue never asked for this. Nimue has been cast out her entire life. Yeah.
She's always told people that tell her, like, you are going to be the queen. She's like, I don't want this.
I don't want this. Everyone hates me.
Yeah.
Like, she had lived a shitty, bullied life.
She's like Jon Snow. I don't want it.
Yeah. It's like, and that's why you're good for it.
And that's
you know?
Exactly
the people
why.
Who don't want it are good for it. And, man, Nimue is ready to risk it all. She's ready to just,
She's going
to go out.
So real quick, still in Grimair, but outside of the castle walls, we get an Iris and Pym interaction.
I loved this
Iris
scene.
Is being
two
so,
completely
like, so
polar opposite, like, personalities. Like, Pym's just like the free spirited, just I'll do anything. And then Iris is church.
Pym's sarcasm is just so good. It's
because Iris
just
is coming
off.
Because Iris is coming off as a bitch. As
the
always.
Context is Iris is. Like saying, oh, I'm so poor, like my father's sake, give me work in the castle so I can support him.
I'll
but
cook,
she
I'll
just
clean.
Just wants to get close to Nimue. Pym's like, I'm not fucking anything. Like,
I am literally bottom of the
like,
barrel.
What?
Like, why are you asking me for a
yeah. like, fuck off.
Her facial expressions do it for me. Then, they're just so funny. She's playing, I said this last episode, but she's playing it comedically and it's hilarious. It's so good.
She's doing it for
she's
me.
She's like, because Iris just keeps bugging her and she's like, piss off. And then Iris is something like, you're one of them, aren't you? Like, the one of the ones who can pass as human. And that's when she's like, piss off.
Yeah.
Like, beat it, loser.
Just walks away.
Yeah. And Iris is just like, fuming steam out of her ear. Yeah. She's scheming, baby.
Iris's actress plays a very good Iris.
You're
she's
right,
like,
though. Polar opposites
so
with these two.
Socially awkward in that scene. Like, just couldn't get a hint. I thought I just loved that scene.
Yeah.
And it was so tiny. Next, we get Squirrel sneaking into
our
the
boy.
Salt Brothers kitchen, our homie, and
look
the
at the
green
you can just
knight.
See the dedication. Always said, like, I just want to do something. I just want to kill Red Paladins. I want to fight. And here he is in Brother Salt's kitchen, the worst place Squirrel could possibly be. And he's here trying to save Gawain.
He's an amazing actor, this
Squirrel. Yeah, this kid. Yeah. I always wonder how do you teach kids to act? How
to cry like that?
Yeah,
I was tearing up watching
fucking,
him just love the Green Knight and look up to him and Green Knight looking at him and honestly respecting Squirrel right back.
Oh yeah, he doesn't call him Squirrel. We get a name drop finally. Squirrel's
name
is Percival.
Wait, is this where we get that?
Yeah, right. Because the Green Knight.
We didn't talk about it last episode.
I thought
episode.
That was on they say that.
No, this is right here.
Because Monk and Squirrel have that.
Reveal.
He's when he's like,
yeah,
that's not
this
a
was
name.
Percival here.
Fucking huge because Percival is definitely, at least for me, like I at least know who Percival is. Like, he is a knight of the fucking round table.
So this is cool because I don't know anything about Arthurian lore. I didn't know Gawain is also a knight of the round table.
Yeah.
So you said it in the first episode.
Yeah, it's like Gawain, Bors are knights of the round table, and then,
This is, between season one and two, I'm going to read up on Arthurian legend.
I was doing a little bit. I was like, I need
really
to know a little bit.
I'll have to watch Quest for the Holy Grail again, Monty Python.
That is my dad's bread and butter right there. My dad owns every like Monty Python skit, any of that. And just as a kid, he was just like, you have to watch this right now. As a kid, I was like, fuck this movie. This movie sucks.
It's British comedy, and British comedy is stupid and dry, but they're pretty funny.
But it's not meant for a kid, but as an adult, I fucking love that movie. But
though we digress.
So quickly, Billy Jenkins, who plays Squirrel, turns 13.
And he's on August 20th. He's crying on cue.
Honestly,
a 12-year-old is
look at this cute ass little handsome stud.
That is a Disney Channel
truly
star right there.
He is gonna have his own show someday. He's gonna be the lead.
I mean, how he's taking over the scenes now is just amazing.
Yeah. He steals it.
Yeah, steals the scene.
Oh yeah.
But
back to dissecting.
But wait, it's so funny because in this scene, I'll take it back a little bit because Gawain's like, okay, now go get out of here. Yeah. And then when they get him, I'm like, shit. Like the whole point, Squirrel is truly stalling hard. I'm like, get the fuck out of there.
I was talking in the last podcast episode about how the Green Knight's like frustration with having this bratty kid around has turned to genuine like
love.
Not love, but respect. He thought he was just being wildly reckless and brave, but like he's done that 8 separate times, and now he's just like, damn, this is really impressive.
He doesn't
kill paladins, my lord.
Yeah, I like this kid's funk.
He walks the walk, you know. Like at first, like Gawain was like, this kid's just all talk, but he walks the fucking walk.
He said something like, I wish I had 100 or 1,000.
Exactly. I wish I had 100 of your kind. He tries to knight him there on the spot. That's how he was finally going to get him out of here. Like, all right, I'll knight him and then he'll scram. Mm-hmm. But knighting someone takes a while. So.
And plus, Arthur's got to be the one to do that.
True. So true.
Unfortunately, as Squirrel's about to leave, Brother Salt comes back from his little soup break. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, Squirrel's dead. There's no way either of them get out of this. Yeah. They're both fucking dead.
So
now.
Right now, where we leave this scene, they're just both caught and both screwed.
Yep. Screwed. Okay. Absolutely screwed.
Moving right along, we same camp go to Father Cardin, who is now in King Uther's tent.
Right.
And they essentially just have
a nice sexy pig laying there.
Sexy pig?
A sexy cooked ass pig.
Yeah, it looked delicious.
I love a good
nice little whole pig pork roast. Yeah, give me that.
Do we get a sexy pig for sexy to me.
That's gonna be our new picture. Just like a fucking
sexy pig.
Yeah, just a sexy pig. But welcome to Bingetown TV.
Welcome to Bingetown. Home of the sexy pig. Okay.
The tangents. So we're getting
tangents.
So off,
So essentially, Father Cardin's pissed that they sent this delegate to Nimue Ingramer. Father Cardin says, we agreed that any negotiation with Nimue would be coordinated by the church. And Uther says, just like you coordinated with us your attacks and slaughtering of the Fae. Like, and they both just kind of take a step back. They're like, all right, cool it, man. We're both in the wrong. Let's just cool it.
Yeah, who are you to call me out?
I like
anything.
That because Father Cardin was totally right that Uther went back, but Uther was totally right. They just committed genocide against the Fae. So who's really the bad guy here? It's both of them.
It's
mostly Cardin.
Uther's got a fucking Burger King crown on.
He does look like the BK.
So Cardin is trying to say, hey, listen, we're doing charity work for you pro bono. We are taking, like, getting rid of this Fae, you know, a parasite that is suckling at your kingdom.
Or as Cardin explicitly says, the weeds. We got to pull the weeds.
Yeah,
you know?
he says, by killing these people, we're committing charity, which is just ridiculous.
And then Abbot Wicklow proposes a swap. Like, he seems to be, like, the reasonable one. Well, kind of reasonable one, I guess. He's just like, look, straight up, sword for the witch, what do you think?
Yeah.
Uther's like, nah. I ain't about that.
Yeah, Uther's starting to feel that king swagger.
Yeah, he's just like, I want to keep.
We like King Uther. Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I have everyone is after this girl. I'm just gonna hold on to her and see what happens, because you know, like, you're offering a good deal, but like, who knows? I could get something better. You know, this is Uther. Like, he's being a good king right now. He's just like, he's not letting others take advantage of him. He's like, I'm putting my fucking
he's
foot
done
down.
With that.
My
yeah.
mom was fucking behind the scenes trying to work me. Like, I'm done with this. I'm making my own decisions.
So, yeah, we get Gawain and Squirrel come into the scene here, right? Mm-hmm. And we get the Weeping Monk, like, defending Squirrel because...
Oh, we forgot to mention...
He's just a kid.
We forgot to mention Squirrel also mentioning to Brother Salt as he's captured, I'm going to gouge your fucking eyes out. And Brother Salt's like, that happened a long time ago.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Okay, I forgot to mention that, but that was a good quote.
So, I mean, Squirrel is just there to fucking shit
on
anybody.
And that's why... this scene reminded me of that because... Skrull just fucking spits right in Father Karn's fucking face. Yeah. It's amazing. I'm sorry. I'm swearing so,
the weeping
so much.
Monk,
it's
okay. I'm just excited. The Weeping Monk tries to defend Skrull when they're taking him away to obviously torture him. He says, hey, he's just a boy. And to bring it back, Gawain specifically pressed this button because the Weeping Monk was trying to justify his actions like, I never fight the kids. Like, I'll only take out the adults. And Gawain says, yeah, but you'll let your homies, like, ride down the kids and you give them orders to kill the kids. So what does that say about you? And he's like, oh, shit, you're kind of right. Yeah. So this is him, like, kind of backing up that talk, like, I don't do anything to the kids.
He's just a
like,
boy. He's, saying, he's no threat to us.
Dude, I don't think that's true, though.
Hell no, 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 obviously not.
Skrull paladins today.
He literally
my
just
Lord.
Snuck in. He just literally just snuck into Red Paladin camp and almost saved Gawain. Like, he is a threat a little bit. You gotta
nothing
admire.
Else.
I
he
mean,
is a
he
threat
let them
to
all
steal
out
your
of
girl,
the burning.
Dude. Skrull
like,
is the man.
They let Skrull lead the all the phase
yeah.
out of that burning.
He's a leader, man.
Whatever.
He
yeah.
is ready to lead. Oh, yeah. And then Father Karn's face is. Not happy. He just looks at the Weeping Monk like, what the
furious.
What the hell did you just yeah. say?
You know what I like?
And then backhands a bitch.
This is a previous yep. episode, but Gawain, like, the moment that Gawain, like you said, Brian, when he turns from, okay, this is like an annoying kid that I have to deal with and make sure yeah. he doesn't die, is like, Gawain's like, so you're the man of your family or whatever that is, like, you're the man, and Skrull looks him dead in the eye and he's like, yup.
Yeah,
even though
I'm
he's,
the fucking
I mean
man.
When I'm honestly surprised Skrull's 13, like, he looks eight seven
I'm
eight.
Sure he's playing a character that's actually yeah like eight
right so like I mean that was so I got the I remember getting the chills watching that and him just like stoically being like, I'm the man of the house,
oh
I'm
yeah
the man of the family, whatever it is, like,
and Skrull is not afraid to, I mean we've yeah. seen him talk shit to everyone, oh, yeah. like spitting Father's Karn mm-hmm. face, like ready to go at it with Brother Saul, like even in other episodes, but yeah
I love Skrull. We all love Skrull. We can't get enough Skrull.
Yeah,
that's love that's Skrull. The moral of this podcast episode.
We love Cart, and then back to Cardin slapping the shit out of the monk, and he's like, "Don't you dare embarrass me again!" Like, because
yeah.
he said, like, he was saying he's no threat to us in front of like the people that were holding Gawain. You know, like mm-hmm. he was like questioning Father Cardin's decision, and like
it was in front of Abbot Wicklow.
Abbot Wicklow
thing.
Too.
Yeah,
that was
like
the huge
the head
factor.
Heads were
yeah.
there,
and he just backhands the shit out of him, which. Just shows that like this mm-hmm. is brainwashing, like he is like anytime he has a second thought of going against the church they just are like
yeah.
you're not doing that,
but we'll get to that yeah. we'll get to that. So next scene we have is Nimue and Arthur. Nimue is essentially telling him they're going to accept Uther's offer of ships for her conditional surrender. Mm-hmm. So Uther's going to send the Fae ships to go to the Desert Kingdoms, I believe is their
yeah,
destination.
The desert
just
kingdoms.
A place they can be safe and start a new life, maintain their traditions
and
culture. And
the Fae are already kind of like familiar with the Desert Kingdoms because we get introduced to that. Like that was episode one, was it not? When they're like, oh, the ship's going to the Desert Kingdoms. Like
right.
they know
yeah,
of
yeah,
it.
Yeah. That's the ship that Nimue missed.
They even say like in it, they're just like, mm-hmm. oh, the Desert Kingdom, there's nothing there. So sounds
yeah.
like a great start
yeah,
spot to start over, you know? So
the Desert Kingdom. That's yeah. cool. I wonder how big this world is. Or isn't it our world?
I guess, yeah.
Isn't it in Britain? Britannia?
Yeah, it's Earth.
It's Earth. Okay. Yeah, it's
decent,
Earth.
It's
but it's,
we're on Earth, people. Yeah. It's the same world we know.
We're in two sci-fi land where we're like, which Earth and universe and timeline
talking,
is this?
Yeah.
We don't know anything. Too much. You guys have been watching too much 100.
Well, yeah, what year is it? Which time dilation?
I'm starting to question my own reality. That's what's happening.
Ooh,
anyway.
Westworld.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
Well, Father Karn is on Westworld.
Jimmy
Dalos.
So, yes, she's just saying, Arthur, I got to do this for my people. But she's like, Arthur, you must live on. You can't stay here and die with me. And they bang. They totally bang.
Let me give you a little cool thing. So I remember watching this and thinking, oh, this is a perfect song for this because it's an original song
yeah.
for Curse by Catherine Langford.
Yeah.
Sings it.
That's awesome.
Really?
I didn't even
yes.
know that. Yeah.
She obviously Catherine Langford plays Nimue and she sings the song, which is so dope because I
cool.
remember watching it with you guys on the phone being like, oh, good song, because I yeah. With the closed captioning it's sort of like, I could be your king,
yeah,
like,
yeah, it's
okay.
perfect song.
That makes it better that she did it. I didn't know
she's
that.
Yeah, I didn't even know she sang in general, to be honest.
Yeah so which good. Is super cool. Love yeah. that for her.
Mm-hmm.
How do we feel about Arthur and Nimue at this moment in time? I'm starting to like them both individually.
I could still ship them
with
together?
Each episode, but together, no.
I agree. In concept, hell yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yep.
But on screen, the chemistry, like, Pim and Dahl forever.
And I'm glad, because I think the next episode does a good job of, like, kind of, it doesn't part the way of Nimue and Arthur, but it does make it believe, like, it makes me believe that Arthur and Nimue is not going to happen.
This is honestly a perfect segue, because I want to talk about it. It pretty much opens with some, Dave likes to say, like, some goodbyes. Everyone's saying their goodbyes, whatever it is. And while this is the first time you see Nimue, it's just Nimue and Arthur talking about the sex they had. They're like, was that good for you? Was that good for you? And they're being nervous and talking. And it's the first time they're talking about something that isn't war, swords,
or like an argument.
Fights of men's.
They argue all the time about just nonsense. Not nonsense.
And this
but
is
like,
the first time you're seeing Nimue be a human. And again, when we get to it, her goodbye with Pim. Loved that. It's like they're best friends. She has a crush on Arthur, or more than that. It's the first time you're seeing her speak about something that's not directly to the plot. It's just like, hey, here's a little tidbit that gets personality, like Nimue being a little shy and wondering if she was good at sex. Like, was that good for you? Like,
I'm
loved
sure that.
That
was her first time too.
100% her first time. No one's banging the demon cursed bear
was
chick.
It good for you? That is just like
the cutest line,
the
honestly.
First question you should never ask after banging
it's
someone.
Obviously good for Arthur. The question is like, he's just like, whatever. Anyway, but I really liked these opening scenes where they're just laying in bed and this, so.
But the opening scene.
Oh, wait, but as, okay. In regards, I'm just saying, as Brian asked it, or Dave asked it at the end of 9, I'm not. But in the beginning of 9, or beginning of 10, when they're doing that conversation, I'm like, okay.
Let me get us to 10. There's one more scene we got to get through on 9. It's a set. Yeah, it's kind of a big one. So it is Idis, who is Cumber's daughter, one of his three daughters.
I like her,
this
I
is
think.
The one with the unibrow jewelry.
Yeah, she's cool.
At Father Cardin's tent. And she is essentially taken on the role of like his messenger, kind of just she's gets sent places as a proxy for Cumber. So she's
but
like,
I think that's also like speaks volume for exactly. Like trust just her. The trust, exactly. Yeah. Like you will get this mission done.
And
like,
is it are they his daughters or are they his sisters? The girls are a group of three sisters, I believe, but are they his daughters?
I think they're
or?
His daughters. Cause it's, okay. I think, it's Idis, daughter of Cumber. I think Idis is the firstborn. I think it's mentioned at some point, but I think she's the firstborn.
And what the scene is Idis is brokering a deal between Cumber and Father Cardin. Essentially just says Cumber accepts Father Cardin's requests for help killing the Wolf Blood Witch. So Cumber is aligning himself with the Red Paladins, completely anti Nimue.
Nimue versus the world, baby.
Nimue versus the fucking
so fuck
world.
And she's gonna rock the fucking world too, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Kathleen's on
that.
Oh yeah. And then we get to 10. But overall thoughts on 9?
So good.
At this point in time was by far the best episode. At this point in time.
Not by far. I have liked like
I don't know. I really
threw.
I mean, I agree. No,
so
I'm on
far.
Your boat.
I
but I just think
had, like,
9
four
was
very good.
They
episodes.
Keep topping each other, which is the way you want to go in a show. You want to start a little bit stronger than they did. But,
I agree. They started low.
They started. The bar was very low, and but
the fact,
hey, here we are,
hey,
and I'm
I
happy
will give
about
this
it.
Show credit because I think we, as a podcast, went into this maybe not as excited as some of the other shows that we cover. But the fact that it has won at least the three of us over through 9
and
episodes,
Jimmy as well too, we'll
going against like our preconceived notions.
I think
of
Luke,
maybe not
Luke is currently watching the episodes right now, and I think
right
he is
he's the
definitely
toughest to sell it on as well.
Yeah.
Everyone else
seven.
Will take
yeah.
it
as one of the seven. Luke is definitely the toughest to sell.
But once
on
he's
things.
In, he's in.
I agree, and I think he will be after 10.
I agree.
So let's just
great.
Get
there,
into
there
it.
There is a lot to like about this show,
let's
and I will die on that hill.
Me too. Too.
I when I was talking to other people about it like early in the season, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of like cheesy, I don't know if I like it. Now I say yes, I recommend, it's worth a watch, like this is a good show,
but see it through, don't quit after one, that's a waste of time. 100%. See it through.
So
yeah,
episode 10,
but
the
finale,
sacrifice,
but
this opening scene. First off, I love how they do the opening, like an opening scene.
I got chills. I have chills
that
right
goes.
Now.
Break it down. It's
I mean, we get some eerie music. There's this hooded person just kind of strolling the streets, and we it's Iris. She's fucking picking. She's picking up weapons. She's choosing out. I like the sickles that she chooses too. Like she, yeah. It's in the chest or something.
Someone's already dead though.
Yeah, someone's already dead. Like she.
There's a bloodied Fey corpse on the ground, and she's just like hovering over it, like dripping tar over this person's chest. Like lights a match, drops it. And it just burns up, and we don't find out it's Iris until she starts walking out of the burning building.
Okay.
But yeah, so she's out here killing Fae.
She has bows at her disposal now. Yeah. So like I think it was basically an armory. It looked like
that
I
must
guess.
Have been like the blacksmith or something exactly. that she killed just to get his armory. And boy, did she! As we'll see,
yeah.
the next weapon we see her with is crazy. But yes, and we know at the end of the day, her only agenda is get the head of Nimue, kill the wolf blood.
You know,
witch.
There's nothing like being a tiny baby girl that is so like unarming to people. I don't know if that's the right word. Where this bitch wants revenge and everything, and there's nothing better than being a tiny girl that nobody would even think to be scared of.
Yeah.
And then she's like, hey, sir, just like, you're dead now. Beat it. Like, so good. I love the idea of this, like, little girl being wreaking havoc on this town.
I like the character of Iris.
Yeah, I mean,
she's
love to hate her.
She's crazy.
She's Ramsay. She's literally Ramsay.
I can't get a read on her.
We can just keep going with her because the following scene was the pillow talk, which was just, you know, we already discussed. So we can just keep going with.
Yeah, yeah. So is there
love the pillow talk?
Okay. Well, no. Nimue and Arthur also investigate that dead body, so it is worth covering.
I think that's a little bit after.
Like, no, they get out of bed from the pillow talk, go right to this scene. And there are a couple Fae like higher ups on the scene.
And
they're just investigating the murder, and they pin it on a guy named Roth, who is the leader of the Tusks.
It's
the people with like elephant trunks coming out of their face.
Correct.
And he has a motive, like, and he's also been causing trouble. I think they said he's taken over like the South Road. And threatened to kill any Fae that agreed to the Pendragon offer. So he doesn't want anything to do with Uther Pendragon's deal. He says, I'm taking my people and protecting them. We'll make a stand in Grimaire.
Arthur's on his side. Arthur's like, yeah, the Fae definitely need to go to the ships. Like, this place isn't safe anymore. Like,
no, that is the Pendragon deal.
He wants
them to go to, on the ships is the Pendragon deal, which this guy Roth is saying, I'm not doing anything that Uther tells us to do, Nimue for that matter. And Arthur's like, no, we got to get all the Fae on the ships. Mm-hmm. So they decide, Arthur, you go deal with Roth, you know, get our eggs in order down there, make sure that the Tusks come to take the ship.
Correct. Okay.
The Tusks are such a literal name for these
people.
Yeah.
like they are what they are.
I just want to say my first two notes for this is Iris B. Cray and sexy pillow talk.
That's basically what it was. Yeah. Iris B. Cray and there was sexy pillow talk.
Exactly. I love it.
Was it good?
Yeah. was that sexy, dude?
You were so right. This is the first that I've bought into their relationship, mm-hmm. Arthur and Nimue. And it's good because this is when they're most vulnerable. You know, it was a good scene.
I'm not sure. Is this the scene where it might be a later scene, but no, it definitely is when he sings to her and
later,
he says,
later,
like,
later,
ah,
later,
okay,
later.
We'll get to it.
Okay, so
that's what I'm fully
second
in.
Iris scene. Let's do this one.
Yeah, so we're introduced. There's, I guess, a Fae, like, some Fae gets, like, substituted in for another Fae, like it's someone
changing
shifts.
The guard.
Yeah, changing of the guard. This is the castle, I presume.
At like the front gate, or it
yeah.
looks like.
And so this one Fae is just now onto a shift, just minding his own business, you know, taking a sip of whatever. And yeah, poor guy just learned. Iris is just like, excuse me, sir. Sickle to the fucking throat.
Yeah, I don't even know. Would you call that a sickle? It was like a
double-bladed
sickle.
That's why I like it.
So
it's a weapon I've never seen before, but I'm definitely
really
a fan.
Shiny,
I like
too.
Sickles. I like sickles, sights, mm-hmm. all that stuff.
So yeah, she kills this Fae guy who was guarding the gate, steals his keys. So now we are under the assumption that Iris has a loaded arsenal for herself and the keys to the castle. Mm-hmm. So she's dangerous.
She is moving around, mm-hmm. man.
It's honestly, and we'll get to it, but when at the end Nimue recognizes her. She looks her dead in the eye and says, Iris? Like, whoa.
Yeah.
And I had that question last because I was like, I think Morgana's the only one who would truly recognize her as someone who is a threat or maybe. But I think one of you had said,
yeah.
No, I think Nimue would recognize her. But Iris I was shook when Nimue looked her dead in the eye.
Yeah,
was
that
like,
was me. I was like, yeah. She was like, Iris was the first person she woke up to.
But Morgana would know that Iris is an extreme. You know what I mean? I don't think Nimue would have
known. I think it's just for
known.
Show's purposes. Like, like
she just snuck around Nimue.
Personally,
never
like, if I woke up out of, a daze and was just like, who's this person here? And then someone says her name. I'm just like, that's just a nobody. But,
yeah,
like, I think it's
course.
Just for show's purposes. Like, they have met, and, like, she does know her name. So.
Yeah. I just thought it was interesting where it's like, Iris has been wreaking havoc, and nobody knows it's her because she's just this tiny baby girl.
She's a baby girl.
Baby girl.
Baby girl. How you doing? So,
I'm going to finish that.
Next, we have a Merlin and Nimue scene. Mm-hmm. And Merlin is venting, just saying, hey, I feel that my presence here is going to endanger any deal that you have with King Uther because Uther doesn't like Merlin, like, at all.
No.
And Merlin's, like, hurting at this point, right? Nimue's like, you're hurt. And he's like, I'm fine. It's,
yeah.
It's fine.
Like,
I'm fine.
No,
I'm
he
just
is
dying.
Literally just poison, that's all. But, yeah.
Merlin starts, like, saying,
use me.
You might be able to pitch this to King Uther because he might be more driven by revenge than seeking out power. And he sure hates the shit out of me. Say, we'll give you Merlin the Magician instead of the Wolf Blood Witch. He says, just pitch it. You never know. He could take the bait.
And I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good idea on Merlin's part. Because, I agree. Like, coming from that perspective, it's like, Uther is definitely would rather much rather have Merlin than Nimue. Like, Nimue is nobody to him. Like, he's literally never met her once.
He wants the sword of power, and I
meanwhile,
think...
Merlin has caused his kingdom all this chaos.
Yeah.
So, sounds good.
So that's the working plan right now, or at least what Merlin wants to do. Mm-hmm. And I love this quote. Nimue's just like, no, I want you to live. Like, I'll just take this. And Merlin says, I have a terrible habit of not doing what I'm told. Just saying, like, I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want to do. Like, I'll give myself to Uther. Next scene we get is Arthur kind of engaging with this dude, Roth, who is the leader of the Tusks. And he walks into their camp to a hostile environment, I would say. Our boy Arthur, this was a great scene for Arthur. He has a monologue where he just puts Roth in his place and is essentially just says, you could either be the last chief who stood his ground and had his people slaughtered just to save his own pride, or you could be the first chief of a new age, Roth the Wise, who like saved all of his people.
Arthur stock on the rise.
You're inspiring me right now.
Yeah. I was like, I'm feeling
that's
good. This is good.
That's because Arthur inspired me.
Arthur stocks stock is rising. I see it with the binge down
I'm
crew.
Stock
like
Arthur,
this was like another phenomenal scene.
That wasn't
scene
even
of
the
acting.
Best part of the scene.
No, not even.
The Tusks are doing this whole blood pays for blood.
Blood
thing.
Must have blood.
And after
baby,
Arthur
you're kidding.
Arthur makes like the best speech
because
like,
we see the guy earlier. Nimue had cut off his hands. Yeah. He's at this camp already, and that's. When
the guy who got his hand cut off,
and that's
was
when
Tusk.
Roth looks at him, and then he looks at Arthur, and he's like, "Blood pays for blood. Like, cough it up."
Yeah, and that's one of those things. It just their primitive tribe or something. That's like their sticking point. Blood pays for blood. Nothing trumps that rule in their society.
We don't care
whatever.
About money
juice
or
train,
anything.
Juice down. Juice train. that's blood must have blood from the Hunter. You got to shout out our Hunter.
Oh damn. Okay. I gotta brush up on my true Gator slang, is what I got too.
But we're any Hundred crossover shout out.
Oh, they would love that little riff right there.
But
anyway,
we're a cursed podcast right now. So.
True.
I just liked it because I love the idea of blood must have blood, so blood pays.
But anyway,
blood, so
Arthur is just like, okay, if you're not gonna bend on that rule, take them. Puts his hands right out and just says, take them off. Slice them.
That knife, that sword, knife, whatever, get machete gets to his wrist.
Roth was calling it real late. Like,
well, yeah, and the dude with the reaction time. When he,
that was my comment,
when
too.
When Roth yells stop, he was already
he already stopped.
Three quarters of the way down his downswing.
He would have, Arthur's in a realistic situation.
Arthur's
I love that. I love that you noticed that because I definitely noticed that.
I thought that was so funny.
It was literally couldn't have been like, it was literally as you said, stop, the guy stopped. Like,
but it was a badass scene for Arthur. You know, he obviously gets to keep his hands, but he was fully committed to losing his hands right there just
love
to save
that about
like
him.
A tribe of 15 tusks, and I think Roth respected that about
and
him.
I think
too.
We get it, we like, get a generic quote. It's like we've heard it before, but I still love the quote. It's like, you're a brave fool, but a brave fool is still a fool.
Yeah,
which is true, you know.
I
like we've heard that quote
smirks
before.
At him. It's yeah. just like, dude, you're crazy, dude. You're
but
crazy.
Because
you're nuts.
You yeah, may be a fool, crazy. But I'll respect you because you're brave is like yeah. that look that he mm-hmm. gives him, you know?
100%. That was an awesome scene. And yes, Arthur Stock is on the frickin' rise through the roof at the
truly.
Moment. Next scene we have is Morgana in Nimue's
so
room.
So interesting.
And the sword is kind of like whispering to
talking
her.
To her.
Yeah, we get
it's
this,
getting to Morgana.
Yeah,
it's
we get the
to
whispers. And then we see the widow. Dude.
Who is
Morgana
just
and
another,
the widow. Are,
this is actually
like
another great character that whoever is on this.
That's perfect way to put it, flirting.
Yeah, whenever, yeah. whenever, that's another character. The widow is another character that it's just, she's on the screen and I'm just. Eyes are glued. I need to know what this,
awesome.
What she is scheming.
You cause... know what I tend to do too, because when they show the widow, you can almost kind of see the face behind it. I'm like, is
yeah.
that Nimue? Is that Catherine Langford?
Yeah, like,
playing
who is this
behind? Like, I'm trying to
right.
look at the literally
like, who's
a profile.
Playing,
yes, like
yeah.
who's actually under that veil? And I'm like, looking at the profile. I'm like, is that Catherine Langford? Like, who is it? Oh,
I love
it.
How Merlin is dying to know who's under the hood too, because
of course.
I don't even want to get to it, but
yeah,
later
yeah,
on, he's like, aw. Anyway, so we get, we go ahead.
Yeah, it's so the widow confronts Morgana and basically looks at her and is like, you have been touched by the Kaliak. Like, you have her eyes? Like, you have her
the
sight?
The Kaliak has given you the unnatural sight. What did you promise her in return?
She's like, I'm not the unnatural one here.
And what yeah. did she promise in return? I guess the sword?
She didn't promise anything in return,
right.
but that leads me to believe that the widow knows how the Kaliak
mm-hmm.
operates.
Demons be knowing demons.
Yeah,
and the widow really. Knows the Kaliak is not just giving around free powers for free. Like, she's going to expect something from you. I don't think Morgana has promised anything, but that leads
she's
me
like,
to believe the Kaliak is going to take something from
and
her.
And we thought the widow was dark, but she literally calls the Kaliak a dark god. Like, you are working with a dark god. Like, let me help you. Like,
yeah.
So even if the widow who we've seen murder people, like, she seems to be like a character like death. Like, she's literally
she was
death.
The Grim Reaper. Like,
and
that
if
was
and if the
was.
Grim yeah exactly if and if the Grim Reaper is saying the Kaliak is bad, the Kaliak's pretty bad then.
Yeah.
So it was a really good scene.
I thought that was interesting that the widow was offering her help too. Like, just
yeah.
why does she care about Morgana? Maybe she just kind of knows
dude,
she's special
the widow
or something.
Knows she must have yeah. like future vision or something. Who the heck knows? But she's yeah, she knows everything, and she's offering to help Morgana.
So then Morgana asks, like, what are you doing in this room? Did you like? Were you sent? Because she. Had previously seen the widow, and I think she was thinking the same thing as us, like, it's the Grim Reaper, like, her occupation is to kill people.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, what are you doing here? Oh my gosh, are you here for Nimue? And before she can get out the name, like, the widow starts freaking out at her, like, pushes her against a wall, like, with her magic powers. Are you remembering
yeah,
this?
She's
I'm
sure.
Like,
no,
okay,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
watching
yeah,
it
no,
again.
No,
I'm like, watching
no,
you
yeah,
do
I'm
it.
Keep going. No,
it's
yeah.
It's like yeeted on against the wall and pinned. Oh, yeah. And then Morgana's like freaking out, like in pain. And then the widow's just gone. Nimue walks in, and Morgana's just like, ooh, I must have just like tripped and fell. And
just ooh, lightheaded.
Shit,
a little bit
gone,
lightheaded.
Yeah, a little lightheaded here.
Yeah.
Should be crazy. But Morgana says, I want to leave Grimaire here. Like,
I have to find another way.
Yeah, I got to find another path. Like,
I
gotta do my thing.
I don't, because she's like, she doesn't know what is going on with herself.
Yeah.
Like, the Kaliak's been talking to her, the widow's been talking to her, she's
yeah.
been thrown in with Nimue and the Sword of Power, she's touched the Sword of Power. Like,
yeah.
what is her deal? What is her role in all
mm-hmm.
this? You know,
because she's not a Fae, but she's helping the Fae Queen. And
yeah, she's
Fae
really
been helping
survive.
Fae for forever.
She's
I mean, they know
her. To the Fae,
other than
she's
that, she's never
Fae.
Really had a purpose. Like, she's never really had something that mm-hmm. drives her. Like, what is her reasons? You know, and that's why she's a blank slate. And she's like, yeah, I just want to leave,
yeah.
find my own.
It's
path.
Cool. But Nimue is surprisingly like receptive
okay
to
it.
That idea, and it's just like, if you want to get out of here, come with me. Gives Morgana the Sword of Power,
which
and
was,
like leads her to escape down like a sewer or something.
Yeah, she's like is entrusting it to her,
yeah.
and she's just like, here's a way to escape. Like, But I thought that was like a really ballsy move on Nimue's part to just give Morgana the sword. Like,
I mean,
we are
just treating the sword like it's fucking
like, I get,
hot
like,
potato.
I get that she's like, you're a good friend, and like, but like, what was the reasoning?
Well, she also knew she was turning herself into Uther anyway. Yeah. So Uther or Morgana having the sword, I'd put my bet with
Morgana
too.
True. That is yeah. At the time, though, I was definitely confused, but that definitely makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I want to just talk about the next scene is a 2-second scene between Pim and Arthur. And I'm like, it's the classic best friend and boyfriend just being like, what's up?
Yeah,
what do you want? What do you need?
Time,
and it's like, okay, fine. All right, I got you. Like 2 seconds almost doesn't mean anything. And I was like, I could just picture that with my best friend and her boyfriend just being like, hey, what's going on?
I didn't remember exactly what the exchange was, but my note is just, Arthur sees Pim, LOL, because I knew it made me laugh and I knew it wasn't
the opening dialogue is him just going, help. And she's like, what? Like, it's so very
what do you need?
Casual and funny, like a best friend
also
and a
just
boyfriend
like, it's
would
just
be.
Like, yeah, like, I know Nimue, like, she's always in trouble. Like, what do you
what
want?
Do
like,
you
I
want
know that
mean?
Is, yeah, I know what you, it's,
I,
yeah,
I,
know
I loved
regarding.
It. I was like, I'm glad they added that because it's just a funny interaction.
It was a good interaction.
Yeah. Like, nothing came out of it, I'm pretty sure.
No. But the reason Arthur's walking through like the town square is because the tusks are rolling up. So the tusks are on, they're coming on the ships. They finally sided with Arthur, saw the light. So they are on team take the Uther deal now. Mm-hmm. Next we get an Arthur and Nimue scene. Essentially Nimue is just making sure Arthur promises to stay with the people. They're saying their goodbyes. Yeah.
Goodbyes. Don't really need to cover anything from this.
This is the scene that you were liking where Arthur sings to her, right?
Is this the scene?
I believe so. I think so. Because
I'm not one for singing though. Like I'm like whenever someone
sings.
Oh,
I'm not gonna
I'm
sing
like...
it. Hell no, but
Nimue, he's good though.
I just love so Nimue before he starts to sing, Nimue says, "You thought you were the most devastating thing ever. I knew you were a bit treacherous, but I didn't mind." Nimue's just like, "Yeah, I knew you were trouble, but
I like a bad boy. I like a bad boy."
He responded with like, "My heart skipped a beat when I first saw you," and then he started bringing up the Winter Lady song.
Yeah, I love it. He's like, "I missed a breath," or said something like that, where it's like, "Woo, okay,
yeah.
I love it, sexy."
Yeah, they start making out.
This is just the calm before the storm.
Yeah,
like this is like
just
15 minutes into the episode. This is not the end of the episode. Like this
not by
is
a long
just,
shot.
Yeah, this is just the beginning.
Next we get a scene that you liked, Dave, is
love.
In the Red Paladin camp. We open up right inside a tent. It's just the weeping monk with a whipped back.
Yeah,
like,
I was explaining to B-Towns beforehand. I was just like, the one of the scenes that definitely spoke out to me of these two is this one. Like you see Father Cardin come in and it's the weeping monk just like kneeling in front of a cross, lashes all over his back, so you know he's definitely dedicated to the church. Like you only take like whippings like that for, you know, religious purposes.
Seeing him without the hood, I was like,
hottie,
mega fucking hottie. But also just like, it took me a second to realize it was him.
Yeah,
because I was like, okay, someone just got beat the fuck up.
Oh yeah.
Someone
just
got a whipping.
It's just his scars, which thinking about it,
I loved the scene though.
Yeah.
What
we get a little bit of background between the dynamic. He says,
"Do you
love me, Father?" And Father Cardin says, "Of course I do." And the quote that we get of Father Cardin to the weeping monk is the following: "You are demon born, an abomination in the eyes of God, but I spared you from the fire because you can sense your own kind. I turned you against your maker. You have to have the will to do what is necessary," essentially meaning you have to be able to kill the Fae, man, woman, and
you
child.
You have to carry out 100%, God's will, you know?
100%, yeah.
And it was, Father Cardin is a great speech giver. That's all I gotta say. Every time he gives a speech, it's just...
His words are terrible, but they sound so good.
Yeah, they hit like, whatever. But anyway, Weeping Monk is still just like questioning his actions, basically. Even after that Father Cardin speech, he's just like, I feel like he's just remembering Gawain's words, like, tell him who you are and like see how they react. Like, he's clearly supposed to be hiding his Fae culture. Like, he's just questioning it all. Yeah. So
do we think Father Cardin has to be the only one that knows he's Fae, right?
I was surprised Father Cardin even knew.
And Abbott Wicklow has suspicions of it. Suspicions. He doesn't factually know. And Gawain. I would say Gawain and Father Cardin. Yeah.
I keep making parallels to Game of Thrones, but this one is a magician's. It's literally frail human, aka Frey, when they're like, the fairies raise her to be a fairy, but she's human. And then the minute that the fairies have a second, they're like, you're a human, you're not a fairy.
Yeah, you're
like, you're kidding.
Yeah, you're not.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. The Weeping Monk is literally that. He's raised to be able to sniff out other.
And the
scene, so messed up.
Yeah, the scene ends with Father Cardin saying, like, only you, like, you can walk your path. Like, I can't walk it for you. Like, only you can choose. And
boy, he's about to choose his path.
He's going to choose very soon. And then, and now we get the Pym and Nimue goodbye, right?
It's Pym and Nimue's goodbye, as far as another quick Arthur and Nimue goodbye. They're both great goodbyes.
Nimue's like, I'll be all right. And Pym's like, fuck that. I'm not all right. This is making me sad.
I don't care about you.
Yeah, right.
This is me.
I love Pym. Pym's.
I love friendship.
That's all I really had on this was just like, love Pym.
Friendship's all we have in this world. I'll tell you that right now.
We are 100% pro friendship here at Binchtown TV.
Yeah, my note was just like, still love Pym.
And
like,
I'm not
just great.
Upset.
Yeah, nothing much. Mine just said,
it's another great scene for Pym.
Another one. We are just seven people who love friendship and love each other, man. Mm-hmm. Do it up. Friendship.
Friend some positive Timothy, dude. Am I right, Dave?
Positivity.
Anyway, next scene we get is Merlin and Uther. Merlin asks...
I feel like this, honestly, is the meat of this episode. Mm-hmm. Like, everything we've got was buddy-buddy, goody-good.
Oh,
like,
shit,
everything's supposed to be perfect, and then this scene happens. So kind of opens up normally,
Merlin is willingly going to Uther's camp and is just... He just asks Uther point blank, are you lying to the Fae Queen? Are you really going to protect their people? Are you really looking to help the Fae's? Or are you just lying to her?
Are you drunk?
Me? I'm sorry, am I?
No. That was Uther's response. He's just might be a little tipsy. Who knows?
How dare you?
He's feeling good. We're all feeling good.
Merlin, by the way, is still bleeding profusely, like through his chest, and Uther says, what happened to you? He said, just a fisherman, I got caught on the wrong hook.
Love that line.
Some good lines.
So Merlin says, I'm surprised you're not celebrating. This is like one of the best moments of your rule. You know, you ended the Fae slaughter, you subdued the church, you negotiated peace with the Fae Queen.
He's saying all this, but like Uther tells him, he's like, I killed my mother. And I think that's when he starts praising him. He's like, he was basically like, you finally did it. Like, it took you long enough to kill her. Like, thank God she's gone, you know? Yeah. And
Uther only just realizes that
more than just his mother knew.
When Merlin was being so casual about the news, he's like, wait a
second. Was bringing
he
was bringing up like the midwife, and he was bringing up that whole story. And that's when he's like, you knew?
Yeah. And he's pissed too.
He's so mad.
He's just like, motherfucker, this whole time you were in it with my mom.
You're in the same category as my mother. Like, you're a liar, which like you've always been, but like, this is the icing on the cake. Like, this hurts more because that's like everything else was kingdom and whatever. It was politics, but this is like internal.
Something else I wanted to note. This entire scene, and this is the first scene that I really noticed it, Uther is referring to himself as we or our in the plural. Did you guys pick up on that? Because Kyle texted in our group chat, and he keyed in on it too.
I have always noticed it. Like, well, I shouldn't say always, because, I can't really think of a time that Uther ever does say, like, I or me. Like, is he always just talking about his kingdom? Like, I always thought just kind of talking about him and his mother, but now that his mother's gone, it's like, why do you still need to mention we?
Definitely a thing, and I realized it for the first time in this episode and this scene specifically.
I have to go back because like Kyle mentioned it, and I had already seen the episode, so it was hard for me to like go back and vividly remember when he ever says I, me, or anything like that.
I feel like if he hadn't, or if he had been saying we and hour up into this point, one of
was
us
there
would
a
have noticed.
Was there a reason why he was saying we? Like,
no,
was he literally supposed to be just,
up.
He was
no,
literally
I just
supposed to be,
it was weird,
like,
but
he should have just been saying
thing.
I and
yeah,
all that stuff.
It was definitely a thing that
wow.
he was doing.
I'm kind of upset I didn't think that up.
They didn't even really touch on it, but I think it's definitely
two internal
to be a
Uthers,
thing.
Maybe? Who
yeah,
knows?
Who knows? But yeah, so this is insane. Uther has his men.
The
Jon
Snow treatment. The Jon Snow.
Yeah, like a savage ass.
He looks at the one guard, just like taunts him over or whatever, and just stabs mm-hmm. Merlin, and then the next guard stabs Merlin, and then the next guard
insane.
Stabs Merlin.
Insane. I was like internally screaming.
I was literally
I was
just
like,
thinking this is Jon Snow just
yep.
getting killed by his own people basically mm-hmm. all over again.
It was crazy.
And it was a scene I was just like, This is what you needed from episode yeah. 10. This is the kind of drama
yeah.
bomb you need.
I mean, and the hits keep on coming. There,
no,
it
is
not
even close
Uther,
to the beginning of it all.
Uther says, "Get him out of my sight," and they just take him to another tent and like throw him on a couple sacks of potatoes or something. And that was like
literally.
That was a scene that stuck with me. Just his lifeless body laying in a sack of potatoes.
He's
That's
acting
like
it's not
the
worth
great
anything.
Magician.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This
mm-hmm.
is the absolute lowest we've
oh,
seen
yeah.
Merlin.
Oh, boy,
physically and emotionally.
He's like still
he
reeling
just,
from the poison before, and it's like,
oh yeah.
Just, like,
emotionally,
six
he's
times.
All over the place, and now physically, he's actually dying.
Yeah. So the next scene we get is Arthur leading the Fae down this path along the ocean side. And in the distance, in the ocean, they see
the
ships
boats,
and
yeah.
the sails, and they all start to get really happy.
Yay.
They say, because
everyone's safe.
Yeah, Uther kept his word. There's nothing to worry about anymore. Like, we're going to take these ships to the Desert Kingdom. We'll be fine.
And we'll leave it at that.
That's it. Yes. Nimue, the next scene is Nimue alone in the castle and
being stalked.
Yeah, the winds kind of open the door behind her. She's like, "Hello, who's there?" And do we see Iris kind of like scuttle past? Do we see her? I thought it was the widow when I just saw it in passing.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but yeah, we've got
yeah.
Iris just straight stalking her, and mm-hmm. we are saved by some sort of
Sir
guy
Steuben.
giving a note saying that the Pendragon
ships
had arrived and the king kept his word, yeah. which is. Yeah.
Which is cool.
So Nimue basically thinks the fae are safe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
everything's
right
good.
After that, she rides out seemingly to Uther's camp.
Exactly.
To,
she's like, "Everything's good here. I don't
yeah,
need to be here. Let's
her
go.
Side of the deal." And Iris, we don't see her, but after Sir Steuben shows up, she backs off and can't try and assassinate her there. So, mm-hmm. but Iris is still lurking.
Boy,
is she. Next scene, we have Morgana in the woods. And it's another Celia scene.
You get
so,
that girl
so,
back.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's a Celia corpse talking to her. So
and they're just talking, and basically mm-hmm. Morgana's just like, "I'm not ready for any of this.
Yep.
Like, I don't know what the hell is happening."
And Celia is carrying another instruction from the Kaliak. Says, "Bring the sword to the temple of the Kaliak so that your instruction can begin. This is how you save the Fae." And with regards to Nimue, she says, "I know you care for her, but this is where Nimue's journey ends."
What
and she references
mean?
The widow
right.
and says the widow has been like, she's like, "There's nothing I can do. I would love to save her too. So would the Kaliak, but like."
See, and now we see a little bit of the opposite. So earlier I was like, we saw the widow franting over the Kaliak, but now the Kaliak's like, you're trusting literally death, you know? Like,
yeah.
Why would you like listen to her? And so hearing both of this like colliding in her, like these two people, she has no idea who they are. Well, she knows Celia, but like two beings like the Kaliak and the widow.
Well,
I'm
took
glad
it as-
that Morgana was literally like, "Is this real? What am I, are you actually here?"
Yeah.
It's like, I'm
those are the right questions.
About questioning
those-
your reality. I'm glad yeah. that she's still doing that, meaning that there is
yeah.
still Morgana in her,
mm-hmm.
which is good.
Yeah, I just need more clarity about what's going on with Morgana at this point and what the Kaliak is
yeah.
and how strong she's going to become, but I think we're going to get that in a potential season two, so I'm really excited for that.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, we have Nimue arriving at King Uther's camp, but Nimue does not have the sword. Obviously, she gave it to Morgana, and King Uther doesn't really like that.
He mm-hmm. is pissed off right now. He is PO'd.
Cardin and Villok. Is that what is it? Villok or
sorry, Whitlow? No, we just said it multiple times. I think
Wicklow?
Wicklow, yes.
Wicklow,
yes, yes,
okay,
yes.
Yes.
Abbott,
Cardin, oh my gosh.
Abbott,
so this, is the, scene from before where I said Cardin just like blew me away. I liked this one when they're like,
yes, I knew
yeah.
it was this mm-hmm. one. Essentially, when they find out that Nimue came, but not with the sword, Cardin and Wicklow move in and say, give her to us. Like, we will torture her and we will find that sword for you. Like, it's a foregone conclusion if you just give us the witch. Nimue says she won't give them the sword until they return Squirrel and the Green Knight. And they kind of just keep having this back and forth. Yeah. Morgana rolls up on the camp. I don't know if you guys have any specifics from the conversation between Father Cardin, Wicklow, and Nimue. The point is, she doesn't have the sword. They want to torture her.
Torture me, skin me to my bones, I'll never tell you.
Yeah, yeah. Great quote.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
So that's all I have, yep.
But Morgana starts to come to the camp to warn Nimue of her fate, since Celia just told her the widow has her on her list, and she gets caught by the widow, who had already warned her.
Who had
not
already
to
told
be
her.
Sniffing
so she's
around
Nimue. She has literally been told twice now to not do this.
Well, I mean, dude, what if the Grim Reaper told you that I was going to die? Would you not try and help me?
I mean, yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
You're on the mic, man. You got to answer that the right way.
Yeah, I would help you as much as I
can. Let's talk about the sick transition we get. So episode one, I talked about how I love these like animated transitions they do in between scenes. And this like widow Morgana transition is so sick.
Yeah.
It's so good. I mean, I commend whoever decided that that's how they wanted to do it. Like, makes this very, like I said before, like Renaissance-y. And it's awesome. I love it.
It's very aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah,
like,
oh, big
graphic.
Visual stuff. Yeah.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And this one in particular was really neat because it was the widow's
face. It showed everything.
Like, turning it. Yeah.
Yeah. It showed like Morgana like slicing through the widow and then morphing into the widow.
Was it the Morgana though? Like, I just thought it was like the blade going through both of them. Like, I just kind of like that was that transition.
I mean, I'm taking it as it's. Like,
oh, no. It came out of it. Like, okay, so I'm watching it now and it looks like. So this probably explains actually. Something later, but the scene is Morgana, a sword comes out of her mouth,
yes,
pokes the widow in the face, like she's bleeding, and then the sword retracts inside of her, and then she's the widow, which I didn't even notice this in this transition. Which...
Talk about, thankfully, exposition is a great thing where Morgana is literally like, I killed the widow, and now I am her.
Yeah. So,
and I'm like, oh, thank you for clarifying.
So that made sense, because like that transition was nothing to me. It was just like a cool like transition, but it actually explains that Morgana just killed the widow, I guess.
Yeah, sometimes show, don't tell doesn't always work. You need the tell. Sometimes you need that. I did this, and now I am
this.
I
would love to see that scene of Morgana just killing the widow.
I wonder why they chose to do it that way. I think...
Maybe there was
more
interaction between them that was important that we'll see maybe later.
I think it was
a suspense.
I think it was to make it subtle so that the reveal later on was a surprise because I was not. Yes,
I didn't get that from that, but I was intrigued. And then when she says that, when she lists the veil and she's Morgana, I'm like,
100%.
Yeah,
we gonna get there. We gonna get
there.
Next scene we get is okay. So this one kind of like splits back and forth.
What is it good for?
Absolutely nothing.
Say it again now. All right, let's get into it.
Comber's army is arriving, rolling up on the phase. First, it's like archers are up on the hill as the phase are trying to board these Pendragon ships. Archers are firing down on them. Some dude takes a bow, you know, like an arrow through the jugular.
Just a lot of death.
Does Pim have the necklace on? Is that why she's being saved? Because she's just running and not getting hit by... I don't know, because she's running with a crowd and everybody but her gets hit with an arrow.
Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah.
It could be Cigar, but it was also the same thing we saw when Nimue was running through the village in like episode 2 or whatever it was, when she just was not getting killed. But yeah, also Cigar is on her side, so we'll just assume it's that.
Curving arrows.
Little wanted action.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we find out that Cumber has kept his promise to the Red Paladins to slaughter any Fae trying to board a ship. Our boy Roth gets killed, the leader of the Tusks. He gets mowed down.
It was intense.
I didn't.
R.I.P. It was intense, and this was a really, really, really well done battle scene. I thought,
agree.
Kind of large scale, and this show I think has done a pretty good job with the fight choreography and the sword fighting in general. So I thought this scene in particular was really cool.
And, you know, like, Roth is going out like a badass. He's fighting people, like, you know, who are, like, his twice the size. And the guy who kills him is a man amongst men, definitely. Like, he's a big dude just wielding a huge axe and just takes it right to the stomach. So,
yeah,
that'll kill anybody, really.
But, yeah, so as the fight is going on, we see Red Spear ships starting to roll up. And
I was like, yes. Like,
I mean,
they're here for Pym. That's why.
Someone thought it was more of Cumber's men, and they said, oh, no, it might have been Pym that said it's Red Spear ships.
I thought it was Cumber's men. I was like, there's just more of them. And
I thought, like, they were absolutely screwed, but I was so hyped that it was the Red Spear because I love the Red Spear.
We haven't seen enough of them.
And they love Pym, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and this scene kind of flashes back and forth from the battle to kind of other scenes going on. Next, we get Idis at the Red Paladin camp telling Father Cardin that, hey, Cumber and his troops are doing their part of the deal. They're slaughtering these Fays like we agreed. But your part of the deal was to give us the sword, and Nimue doesn't have the sword. At which point, Cardin kind of just airs it out and says, King Uther is going soft on these fey people.
We need answers. It'll be like, we'll get answers in like days or weeks.
Being too sympathetic to the Wolfblood Witch. Like, he says, if any of his men give you any shit, you just start fighting.
I loved it. I loved that. I was getting hype. I was like, let me get in on that.
Yeah.
It's like, if anyone tries to cross you, yeah, just kill them. And
so now it's Red Paladins are fully committing to Cumber's cause and are now anti-King Uther completely, which previously they were kind of playing both sides of the fence.
Yeah, they were on both sides.
So, and now I guess they are engaging in full-out war on King Uther. So there we go. Back to the battle scene, we get the Red Spear leader. Do we get her name? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought the group was called Red Spear until later we find out that the leader is named Red Spear.
Who we love. We are big fans.
Her name is Red Spear, and she is amazing. We do love her. I have right here, Red Spear rides in for Team Fuck Cumber. So we hear that the Red Spear hates Cumber and his daughters. And it's amazing.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And like you said, this, like, the whole scene is just, like, very well done. Just, like, the whole fighting and the intensity of when Red Spear arrives and her gang of raiders, like, it's there.
So Red Spear is saying, kill all of Cumber's men, but leave Dagmar to me, which is one of the sisters, or one of the daughters of Cumber.
Correct.
The sister of Idis.
And which we never knew they knew each other, right?
We had heard, in one of the scenes where Pym was on the Red Spear's ship, she says something along, she verbalizes her disdain for Cumber and specifically the sisters. I think she says, like,
see, and when they were fighting too, are we at that point in time, like, of them fighting?
Yeah.
So, I thought they looked alike.
Could Red Spear be like a lost sister?
Like,
well, they're both
sister?
Definitely more Viking-esque than.
I just didn't know if it was like the design of like the I wasn't sure if it was like the design of the Viking that made them look similar and that they were both brunette, or like that was meant to make them look similar and that it's like supposed to drive these questions.
I totally thought the same thing, and it's hard to tell what they're trying, but then we get,
I mean, only time will tell with these kinds of questions.
So we get the Red Spear almost getting killed, and then Arthur saves the day with an arrow, and then they do the classic battle thing where they look at each other and
they just
nod, it's like as if you have the time, but for drama's sake,
head nod is just like, yeah.
I love it is in every battle scene of every movie and show of all time. The knot.
I ship Red Spear and Arthur. Sparks were flying right there.
Anytime anyone looks at each other.
I needed that look
because
that is what I needed to confirm the ship.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I needed.
And I'm confirming. I'm going to say Nimue and Morgana, or I'm shipping that. So Nimue, I don't think
Morgana,
so.
I don't think.
I love
now, this is all coming together on our theories of Arthur and Nimue just not being real. Like, it just doesn't feel
I'm full in on those two not being together.
I think they're like these small things. That's eye fuck right there. You know, that could mean something in the future.
Yeah. So Arthur, worth noting. Okay. So how this plays out is Red Spear engages Dagmar in a fight, gets disarmed. while this is going on, Arthur is killing the guy who killed Roth. So he gets his first kill. When the Red Spear gets disarmed, Arthur, like, bows down Dagmar, who was about to kill Red Spear. So it was more than just, like, helping her out. Like, she was about to die. That's why they had the look.
That's where the nod comes into play.
Also, meanwhile, Kaze is being a boss, protecting Pym and the Fae-like civilians in the cave.
That goes without question.
Kaze, great. She didn't have, like, pretty much anything these past two episodes, but she's still steady killing it in the background.
And so, like, I guess the finishing blow is given by the Red Spear.
Yeah.
And this is an interesting...
Do you have the quote?
Yeah. Well, what was it? It was just...
The Ice King's throne will be mine. Tell Idas she's next.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So I am looking at the quote right now. And so this made me... This is where I'm really thinking, like, there could be a sister... Like, she could be a sister, like... What if she was like the firstborn daughter and she was like his king?
Defected or something.
But the thing is like she said, tell your sister. Like she didn't just say tell Ida. She said tell your sister.
Seems
like
personal, yeah.
So it's like, I think, so that kind of almost scratches out that theory. But I still, there's still hope for it that I, like that the Red Spear could still be Cumber's daughter in my mind.
Hell yeah.
I
love that
possible
theory. That's,
I think that's
a
possible thing. And I don't know how that would play in politically, but it could play in, you know.
Hell yeah. I want that. I want anything good for the Red Spear.
Me too.
Okay, we good on this? That's pretty much all that happens. Red Spear's fine. Arthur's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're good. Love Red Spear. Next, we are going to Salt Brother and Squirrel.
Yeah.
Squirrel's just the legend. Like, I don't have
such
any of the quotes of this exchange. Go for
it. So, what's the eyeball guy's name?
Salt Brother.
Salt Brother is threatening to take his tongue, all this stuff. Squirrel says, go ahead, take it. I'll still be talking. I'll be in your nightmares talking, telling you how ugly you are.
Yeah.
Just so incredible.
Why is
amazing?
To why
the
is he
end
the
of his last breath, he will be shit talking, and that is our point.
That was proof. Like, he was facing death, and he just did nothing but shit talk death in the face right there.
I loved it.
Our boy Percival, we can say that for a fact now. Our boy,
Knight
of the Round Table to be.
Another dope line. When you try to wake up, your eyes won't open because you sewed them up like a bloody idiot.
Yeah, I love that. Like an idiot.
Like that entire line about telling, like, I'll be in your nightmares and you can't even wake up from it because your eyes can't open because you sewed them shut. You're fucking stupid. Incredible.
Squirrel.
And then we get a save from Weeping Monk himself, who just keeps coming in to save the kids.
This made me feel so good. I was just like, I know it was just, like, recently that we found out that he was Fae, but, like, I'm so glad that he was able to just save the boy. Save the boy.
Gotta save the boy.
That's all we get here. It's just him killing
Just love
Salt
to see,
Brother.
Yeah, just love to see the Weeping Monk switch sides.
Mm-hmm. Weeping Monk's... I might go on record as saying Weeping Monk is my favorite character.
Yeah.
It quickly became that, because all it was just Weeping Monk was just known as a mercenary, just murdered Fae, was part of the Red Paladins, and now we're getting backstory, which, yes, makes, at least, I wouldn't say he's my favorite, but right now, for me, he is the most interesting character.
I will say, especially Weeping Monk and Squirrel together, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, what a duo.
Oh, I didn't even think he just.
What a duo.
Oh, God. Stop talking about these two, because we'll get to them. Next scene we get is going to be Nimue and Gawain.
I didn't see this coming.
I did not.
Did I.
Well, one, because also I had explicitly said Gawain was a Knight of the Round Table.
Right.
And he's fucking dead.
What do we do?
Nimue's sitting there just like eagerly waiting to hear back from Squirrel and Gawain, and the guards just just toss this ragdoll, his body.
They throw his body and say, here's your friend. And she starts like crying, gets very emotional. And then her fey powers, like the ivy starts coming up on her cheeks, and she has this weird, like, I don't know, chakra blast or something.
It's like a ki blast. Yeah. It's like just something straight out of Dragon Ball Z.
Mm-hmm. That just like,
shakes
she
the whole
freaks out
shakes
on
the
it.
Earth,
like it's
man.
Like an earthquake or something.
It shakes the fucking earth.
Pretty cool. But yeah, so she's emotional. R.I.P. Gawain. She like runs out, or maybe she faints, but grass starts to grow around Gawain, which I thought was cool.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a good, it was symbolic.
I think it's interesting how they did that, because obviously we saw him get tortured and everything, but we don't see his death, right? Like, we don't see the moment he actually died. I mean, that's, like you said, symbolic. We get the death, but it's more like he is a big character. You could have had the most epic, like, gut-wrenching death on
screen. I would have liked to
see
him die fighting, yeah.
Yeah, everyone wants a warrior's death.
Knight of the Round Table. How about that?
Yeah.
but that's actually electrocute his chest. But those are the kind of wrenches we need. Like, they did say, like, this isn't, like, all actual lore. Like, this is just, like, right. our take on it.
Yeah,
exactly. So that's why, like, seeing Gawain dead was, like, a twist for me, because I was, like, I was full-on expecting this guy to live through it all.
Are we 100% sure he's dead? Because,
no.
like, her powers, like,
it was so
we haven't
quick.
Seen her use those powers for anybody else, and I feel like I saw his cheeks start to, like, show Ivy himself, like, she, like, was doing something to heal him.
Yeah.
I'm not 100%. So, yeah. We're talking like we're 100% sure. I speculate,
but I will digress and say that I agree in that, like, it didn't feel like a death. Like, didn't feel like it was meaningful. Like, there was, like, you know, tears were shed and, you know, it was emotional, but it didn't feel that deep. So I really, I think there is hope for Gawain still being alive, and that maybe she did just give him some of her life force.
I don't think we got enough Gawain Green Knight to have him be dead. Like, I really truly don't. I can't believe that they would introduce,
like, he's not gonna be able to see the Weeping Monk be a good guy and, like, lead the troops. Like, he was the one who inspired the Weeping Monk, and
now
he's dead. So dead in quotes, we'll leave it, like, it's a question.
Be able to see Percival become a man.
He has to live.
Percival,
baby.
We're gonna move on to Abbott Wicklow. Abbott Wicklow.
Wicklow.
My notes say Villock, and I think I just gave up on trying to remember his name, so now I keep, like, seeing Villock. Abbott Wicklow and the Trinity Guard are waiting to confront the Weeping Monk, who is now with Squirrel. Mm-hmm. The Weeping Monk takes out two of them, like, 2v1, but then they, like, surround him, and he gets messed up, is about to be executed by one of the Trinity Guard, when Squirrel, from afar, who's observing the scene, throws a rock at the dude who's about to, like, pass down the sentence, which kind of just gives the Weeping Monk, I don't know, a burst of energy and distracts him just enough for him to start,
hope.
Like,
it's just like, this is, like, what, this is why you save, like,
yeah,
this is, you save this boy, and now he's returning the favor. Like, this is, like, something you've never felt before. Like, you've been out there, like, you do something for someone, and it's just, like, a tap on the shoulder, like, you did a good job, whatever. But, like, now it's like, this is friendship right here. This is what friends are for. Uh-huh. Like, help one another.
You're hyping me up.
Yeah,
right
so I mean, this is how I was feeling. I was like, this is the blossoming of a friendship.
Weeping Monk told him to run away, just, like, get yourself to cover or something before he started to be a badass and take it on himself. For him to, like, stick around,
he doesn't know that. He's never had that feeling of having someone actually there for them.
Squirrel
actually
picks up a sword too, doesn't he? Like, he starts, like, walking
it's
forward.
The foreshadowing,
dude,
he's
incredible.
Walking forward.
I can't wait till he can actually
honestly, by next season, he's gonna grow a foot. Kids that age grow a foot bad.
His voice is going to change and he's going to be so creepy. Whatever. Squirrel, we love you. Keep killing it.
We love
Squirrel. The Weeping Monk is, we got a very cool scene. He's just fighting all odds right now.
Right. So, next scene we get, still in the same camp, which is kind of going crazy at the moment because the Red Paladins are now against Uther, but Cardin finally has a hold of Nimue.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they kind of took her from underneath Uther, right? Just, she's in the camp and said, Nimue, you're mine now.
Yeah.
So Cardin is about to execute Nimue when the widow arrives. Oh
my
God. My
goodness gracious.
My head was spinning, honestly.
She, yeah, the widow just gets in between Cardin and Nimue, opens up the veil, lifts the veil, and it's Morgana is under the veil.
My brain exploded.
I was literally seeing stars. I was like, what am I missing here? You know? But, like, it was an intense, awesome moment, though. Because now that we've talked about it and we've explained that transition and everything, mm-hmm. makes a little more sense. It was just awesome.
Yeah,
you know?
Cardin's like, what the fuck? Nimue's like, what the fuck? But, like, She lifts a veil, turns to skeleton in front of Carden. He's like, oh my gosh. And then Nimue gets the finishing blow.
See, that's like, that's the, I think that must be the unnatural sight, like the look of death, basically. Like, mm-hmm. I see you in my skull form, you're dead. And Nimue just, yeah, gets, Morgana gave her the sword. And yeah.
So I guess the unnatural sight, I thought the unnatural sight sure that was the ability to tell yeah, sure who can die.
Okay.
Who's about to die.
No, that, something like that. That would probably, okay. That,
okay.
So, yeah. Same
thing. Yeah, so.
What are you? I'm the widow.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like.
Chop that fucking head off, Nimue, yeah. baby.
Nimue chops off Carden's head, which
I
was heartbroken because I was like, Carden was my guy. From episode one, I was always like, Carden is
best actor on the show,
without a doubt. For and sure. There it goes. That head just gets completely separated from the body. And although it was definitely a great scene, yeah. I will miss having Father Carden as a villain, but. Boy, this is the turn we needed from Nimue.
Yep.
P.
Yeah.
Rips in the chat.
No,
to buy
F's
the card
in chat, baby. F's in chat.
So, yeah, and this is where we get this just very obvious exposition we were talking about where Morgana and Nimue are talking, and Morgana says, I killed the widow, and then I became her. Now I can feel who's going to die. And that's all we really get, because Morgana really probably doesn't even know what the fuck's going on
And
right
we
now.
Get a little bit of who is next, actually. Doesn't she say Merlin? She's like,
oh yeah, yeah she's like, and now I'm feeling Merlin. Someone else, Merlin. But yeah. Luckily, he's just dead on that sack of potatoes in the tent. Well, so he's
also,
the
I
camp.
Don't know if it's here, but is she explaining like you can like there's still hope? Like I know it's Merlin. There's still time to go save him. Like right now, he is currently dying.
Yeah,
like, there's
yeah,
time
yeah, yeah.
to go save him. Okay.
Yeah,
but hopefully. Season two will explain the whole transition of what that scene happened, because it was literally just like not
yeah.
not
because none of the characters really know what's going on either, so yeah. there's no way for us to find out, but mm-hmm. that's really it. Morgana and Nimue go find Merlin in the tent and take him away. That's the end of that scene. Next one we get is Arthur and Red Spear.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Where the Red Spear, like, more officially introduces herself, says, you know, I owe you a debt. I am the Red Spear, exile of the court of the Ice King, a court now under siege by traitors.
Did you just say exiled by? The-
yes.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
That is her. That is his first daughter right there in our face. And she got exiled 100%.
She could be like his older sister or something.
That
is
also
safe. She is
the
hottest girl on the show also.
And she also could.
I have to say that.
I'm giving them the eyes. But no, that also brings back to the point where I said earlier, it was like, tell your sister or whatever.
Yeah.
She also just might not identify herself as one of them. So
100%.
Theory is now back open for business, baby. Theory is back
Red
open
Spear.
For business. Yeah.
Boy, we
better
love
than
the
it
Red
ever
Spear.
Was, honestly. Love it.
Okay. But yeah, so it's Arthur and Red Spear are officially introducing themselves to each other, and they have overlapping interests. So they are now allies. Red Spear and the Fae are allies.
Ship it.
And our Fae needs some allies right now. And the Red Spear just rolled up on Cumber's men. So we're good. Next scene we get is Nimue, Morgana, and Merlin.
Casual little scene. Yeah. Nothing crazy here.
So they are going
by. I love the way this was shot. Where they decided to shoot,
like
the set is beautiful.
Yeah, it's not at all at like
little
the coolest
bridge.
Place ever.
Like water flow. Like,
bridge going over this rushing waterfall. Like, cut into the side of a mountain or something. It's just like awesome, this scene. And Merlin, of course, picks here to just collapse and say, no, like I can't go on, just leave me here. Enter Iris.
But before that, I love that Nimue is still saying, I have to go back for Squirrel. Like, it's like, I'm going back for Squirrel. She's a loyal ass bitch. I mean, a lot of kings will go for that sacrifice the one for the many type thing.
I mean,
but
after what we've
still...
seen of Squirrel, I would go back.
Would
I'd be like,
say,
oh yeah, this
kid
is meant to. I'd be like, this guy is meant to be something one day. Like, I'm gonna put my life on the line for this guy.
Yeah. I'm talking about buying stock in somebody. Squirrel.
Squirrel. I'll buy stock in Squirrel and Arthur right now.
Oh, my God. All of it.
But, yes. Enter Iris.
Ooh, enter Iris. And there's not much back and forth. Nimue just looks up and doesn't understand. She says, Iris, what are you doing here? And Iris loads the bow and just puts two right in Nimue's chest.
And Nimue is charging forward during this too. She gets shot once in the left and left shoulder. She's still pushing. Then she gets another one on the right where it like throws her side of the body.
I remember looking too at the time at where I'm at, and I'm just like, there's 10 minutes left in this episode. Like, what is gonna happen? And more shit happens, but I'm just so I'm wanting more. Like, this is like what a season finale is supposed to do. Like, I'm getting to the end of these 10 minutes. I'm like, is season two ready to be queued up or what? Yeah. Like,
Iris is cold behind the eye, shooting these arrows.
Looking hot Nimue, as hell.
That's insane. It's psychotic. Nimue falls. She is hurt and bad. She falls off the bridge. Merlin grabs her by the hand. It is gut-wrenching. And then she falls into the water, and boy, what a time.
Merlin loses his shit, immediately goes for the Sword of Power, which he is very familiar with, and starts wielding it and just starts absolutely murking on paladins who are rushing on.
This is
like he's whipping it around, conjuring lightning storms, and Iris is like, oh shit.
We've been waiting for this ever since we saw that little glimpse of Merlin using magic in that flashback where he just seals the door or whatever it is, like causes some rubble to happen. But this is what we've been waiting for. Merlin at his peak, being a fucking badass, just shooting lightning everywhere, just anywhere that it matters.
Truly epic. I mean, just the mourning of a daughter from a father. Talk about magic comes from fucking pain. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I love it.
I don't know what's in store for Merlin. I don't know what's in store for the Sword of Power, like who's going to wield it next. I guess it goes to I don't know. There are so many questions I have like going into season two from this scene.
Yeah, he grabs Morgana and they disappear.
They just teleport away.
Yeah, Iris escapes also, which is important. Being the
very important
the main villain of season two, I assume. Because now that Father Karn's dead, must be the one to step up to the plate.
I assume she'll be the face of the church
now. Basically play Father Karn's position, which I'm happy with. Like, the actress is doing a very good job.
Wicklow also got away too. He was able to get away from the Weeping Knight after he took out the Trinity Guard. Speaking of the Weeping Knight, we have him and Squirrel on horseback fleeing the scene.
Literally, like, goosebumps are just running over my
body. This is the duo of the century. Them putting Squirrel and the Weeping Knight or Weeping Monk together.
It makes it even more, like, after what he says here, it makes it even more, like, meaningful. Like,
it was a very natural conversation. It didn't feel forced, being like, okay, Squirrel's an animal's name. What's your actual freaking name, kid? Yeah. Like, tell me. And he's like, I don't like that name, Percival.
Percival.
Well, we knew that one, right? You said, and then when we get the Lancelot reveal.
Oh, yeah, the Weeping Monk is Lancelot.
I was laying in bed last night. It was like 10 o'clock when I had probably watched it, and like I was energy out the ass. I got out of bed and I was like panting back and forth. I was like, what the hell just
this
happened?
Was an awesome reveal. I wasn't expecting it. I should have been expecting it because I had mentioned
in our last podcast episode, because when, or maybe not, it was this podcast we talked about Squirrel. No, it was last podcast where Squirrel. Okay. So when Squirrel revealed himself as Percival, I was like, that means a lot to me, because the only few knights of the Round Table I know are Arthur, Percival, and Lancelot. Like, I don't really know the names of anyone else. And it didn't even appear to me, like, at the time, like, that we've already been introduced to Lancelot, like, all this stuff. And here he is, been staring us in the face the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Hot boy Weeping Monk.
Yeah.
And that, like, love that. That's good for me. When it's a great deal.
I just still can't get over that. That reveal was, like, that was way better than the Merlin being Nimue's father reveal. Like, this was just something completely out of the blue. That
I
just
was excited for this one. Totally. I was really excited and for this.
This
one.
Is when I was definitely like, okay, I season two. Where are you? Like, this is really. I was sitting there. I'm like, I'm pissed. I can't watch more.
They had
this.
That up their sleeve the whole time. They knew they were getting a season two. When you drop Lancelot, you get a season two.
Yep.
All right. We have one more scene here. It is at like the Holy Land of the Church. I don't know. Their
can't
main
believe this
building.
Is how the episode ended.
Just, what like, was what, chills?
What was the name of like the head of the church, the really, really old dude.
I forget.
Did we get his name?
Like, it's just His Holiness, I think. It's just
His Holiness is there. So it's a big deal, and it's like a ceremony.
Something's happening. We're celebrating something.
Iris is becoming Sister Iris of the Trinity Guard.
She's got to be the first woman, right?
Yeah, we don't see many women in the Red Paladins.
There's
got
to be huge things in store for her.
Because anytime she wanted to join, they're like, oh, you're a woman. There's no way. But like, so she must be.
Girls.
She's probably the first sister, you know? Like,
well, she killed the Wolf Blood Witch. That was number one in their bingo book, dude.
I was waiting for Nimue's eyes to open in that water. Did we get eyes open?
No.
I was like waiting for her to just be like, and then go to fade
that'll
black.
Be the beginning of season two, just her eyes
also
opening.
Though, Iris has lightning scars all over her face. Looks pretty cool, honestly, because Merlin is hitting her with lightning.
Yeah.
That is the end of episode 10. That is the end of season 1.
I never, like, after recording episodes 1 to 3, I never would have thought that I would at this point in time feel like this. Like, I want more cursed.
Nope.
I didn't feel like that.
No shot in hell, and here I am.
And here I am, literally just, my goosebumps haven't gone away still.
Like, I got lucky that I was on the last two podcast episodes, because
these were
the best episodes.
Yeah, these were the best ones
about.
To be on, and 100%. I guess there's not much else for me to say other than episode 10 was by far, again, the best episode. Yeah. Like,
and I said it at the beginning, this entire season has felt like one big crescendo. Like, each episode has topped the last. Yep. And that's how you want a season. That's how you want a show to be, you know?
I'm going to go ahead and say, obviously, Nimue is not dead, but Gawain, I'm going to say, not dead.
Yeah, we have any theories?
I'm hoping that Gawain is not
Gawain
dead.
Alive.
Such a come up for Weeping Monk, Lancelot. Like,
I don't even have
he's just
don't
gonna
even
have
know.
A character. Just
he's gonna have a journey because he's gonna be introduced to the Fae, and the Fae are gonna be like, "We don't want him."
Yeah,
why?
But he is a Fae,
and he's
Gawain
also
was
a
about
strong.
Him, and Squirrel is about,
and he's
him.
A strong Fae.
He's,
yeah,
he's gonna be the strong. It's like Gawain. He could be the new Green Monk.
All Fae
are
brothers, man.
One.
Even the lost
so that's
ones.
A cool theory, actually. But I'm thinking, like, the only way Weeping Monk gains any reputation with the Fae is Gawain, so he has to come back and vouch. Like, the people the most trusted Fae right now is, like, well, was Gawain. Like, everyone knew of the Green Knight and how he was a hero to the Fae. So, like,
if he's
vouching for Lancelot, then, like, you know, I feel like that just only solidifies Lancelot being there. So
I love that we're calling him Lancelot.
Yeah,
yeah, feels Sir good.
Lancelot,
feels
oh
good.
My
feels gosh, good.
Sir Lancelot.
But yeah, that's goddamn. That's our season.
Yeah, that's the season. I guess we'll end it with a quick bang, kill, marry,
of
as
course,
per
as
usual.
We do.
So we're doing fuck gender. We don't care here. I think this is the first one we are mixing genders up, which is.
And all of them, all across the board.
It's
all
a big
podcasts.
Step for the pod.
It is. Giant leap for Bingetown. So we are doing, the theme of this one is leaders. What do we say? Leaders
of? Yeah, it was
of,
like just leaders of
leaders,
like, yeah, exactly, yeah. Faction leaders.
So we're doing the Red Spear.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to beat.
Cumber and King Uther.
All right, let me take you right here.
Easy.
Am going to marry the Red Spear because she is Bay. She's a badass. She's beautiful. Like, she's on Team Faye. She's one of the good guys. She loves Pym. I love Pym.
God, I couldn't have said it any better, Ted.
I'm putting a ring on it right then and there. Between the two kings, Cumber and Uther, I'm not sold on Uther. I think he's a little bitch boy down to his core. I don't think he's a good king. He doesn't command respect. I'm killing him. Cumber, I'm getting some of those Bobby B vibes from Game of Thrones. I think he's aggressive. I think he's big. He could be a nice bear. He could be a nice bear. He could be a nice bear in the sack, man. And I'm gonna bang Cumber.
I hate to not add any original thoughts to this, but hot fuck tags. That was exactly what I.
Damn, I am
I was
about to
that.
Vomit.
Thank you, Mary.
That's how I'm at. But I'll divert.
Okay.
Fuck Cumber. He's getting the axe.
Okay, so
you
you're
just
not
said
him.
Fuck Cumber.
No, I'm not like actually fucking him. I will
screw
be.
Screw Cumber.
Yeah, screw Cumber.
But
he's
like,
getting
even
the
axe.
Still,
even
that. I hate Cumber.
Yeah,
there that. You go.
Screw
yeah,
Cumber.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, no.
So killing him.
I will kill Umber. Cumber.
Wow.
Yeah.
Umber.
Magician. Yeah, I don't. That's what popped in my head.
Love it.
Yeah, we'll get that.
And then I'll bang Well, okay, the Red Spear, we're all in agreement. The Mary right there. I'll put a ring on it.
Hot girl.
Put a ring on it. And then I guess that leaves me to bang Uther, which I, like I've said, I've never had quarrels with Uther, so I'll take my one night stand with Uther.
All right, fair enough.
Wow, hell yeah. I mean, I'm agreeing fully with Tags, but Red Spear. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm a little scared of her, I'm not going to lie.
Another series down, guys.
I know.
Cruising.
This was a good one. I'm so glad it ended up being something we, especially us three, are like fucking
hyped
about.
Ended on a really high note, and I'm happy about it. Yeah. This show really came into its own, and I enjoy it. I'm going to be recommending it to people, because if you're not podcasting about it, I think this could be such an easy one just to crush in like a week and binge. And that's what
I'm
going to
tell you something, though. So just as a rule, I watch a lot of sci-fi stuff. Sometimes you watch it and things go over your head. I always watch read recaps. Mm-hmm. And the recaps, no offense to the recap people, I'm like, these recaps are not that great. I'm like, talking with you guys really makes me go, okay, the things that maybe I didn't fully grasp at first, mm-hmm. I'm like,
there's some things like
it's
that's
so
why
nice
I haven't...
And that's why podcasting is my number one, like, just listening. I listen to podcasts on every fucking show I love, so I'm acting like a fan listening to you two boys talk about this. I'm like, cool.
I mean, I've sat through like the 100 podcasts, and like, I've never watched it, but like, just hearing you guys, like, the passion, but enough self-promotion.
Whatever, we'll gas each other
I up. Just mean, like, this is one of those ones where I would need supplemental content to kind of talk
agree.
Through
you need to hear everything
exactly,
and boy, we are happy to provide it.
We are
definitely.
So that's the episode. If you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. We're figuring out our next show for Binge With Us. So if you have any suggestions for another Binge With Us show, let us know. Maybe we'll consider it. Who's to say? We're tossing a bunch around. We also have episodes following the 7th and final season of the CW series, The 100, and another Binge With Us series following the show Spartacus. Watch them, give it a listen. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a fucking great week.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Woo! Emily Coates, I'll miss you.